Thanks, Steve.
You forget how to turn your button on in one day.
It's not as easy as you think. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, making a triumphant return from the world of law. You were up for jury duty, and I can tell by your face it did not work out the way you had hoped.
No, I'm so bummed. I am so bummed.
What happened?
Well, first of all, hang on. I got to get my notes.
All right.
I have notes.
Kevin, do we have that Waiting for Wendy music that we loaded up a few weeks ago? No, it's not available.
I'm back.
I said to Kevin, we should have some music, because from time to time, not often, but you have some side business, and we should have some music ready.
We found some
pleasant music for people on the off chance that you may have some side business. Here it is. Listen. So let's say, like in a situation like that, you had to leave, we would just play a few moments of this.
Good, I like it, because you know how messy my purse is. I went to jury duty. I got there early.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be there at 9 o'clock in Markham.
Yeah.
Markham, don't even know him.
Did you say that? Because that might have been the last straw where they didn't use you based on that.
I didn't even get to talk to anybody. Here's what happened. I went there, reported at 9 o'clock. This I found was strange. There was a huge long line of people at about 8:40 getting mm-hmm. ready to enter the courtroom in mm-hmm. Markham. And as I went to stand in the line, some very nice gentleman said, "Women go this way," and pointed to there was no line. So then I felt guilty walking past all these men. There were probably 100 men lined up, and women could just walk right past.
Why was that? That doesn't seem right.
Because it was cold outside, I guess. And then when I got inside, it said women this way and men that way.
And I really? That seems...
Well, I think I figured it out.
Out of touch with the times.
Well, you have to go through the metal detector so they have a woman checking the women.
Oh, all right. I guess that makes more sense.
I mean, I felt like I'll wait with the men.
But the difference in lines is that dramatic?
Yeah.
All right.
Because they were just letting the women through. So then I went in and, you know, I walked through the metal detector and I beeped because I have a titanium knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained that to the
guy.
We can't all have that.
We can rebuild her. We have the technology.
So I said there was a gentleman there with his wand and he had the thing to scan me too.
Is that what you want to call it? Fine, whatever.
That was Bill and Dane's show yesterday.
I'm sorry I missed that. And I got wanded, and then he said, it was very weird because he goes, "Do you have a watch on?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot to take that off." He goes, "Well, I will have to tell Santa Claus." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Well, I mean, you were supposed to take your watch off and put it in the tray." And I said, "Well, I knew I was going to beep because of the knee." And he goes, "Well, you got a year to redeem yourself to Santa Claus." And I'm like looking around. Is anybody hearing this?
What if he pressed a button and a guy dressed as Santa Claus came out and he just whispered something to him and Santa just nodded?
You were the juror. That's when you say guilty.
Right. Immediately.
So I get inside and, you know, I'm there at about 8:50. I check in and I'm sitting in the giant room, which I have to tell you, they make a big deal about bring money for vending machines. That's what it says on your juror summons.
Sure.
And then there were several machines that were out of order. Now, what are you doing? And why don't they open up a little cafe there that the money could go right to the courthouse?
I think they used to have one because I've been at the Markham Courthouse a couple times, and I think they used to have that. I'm almost positive. I don't know why it's not there anymore.
That's genius. Sell little sandwiches
right.
and
you
some
make
yogurt.
A fortune.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm like pretty excited.
All the machines were out of order?
No, but
just
there were
a bunch.
I didn't get snacks because I, you know, was feeling hopeful I would be in a courtroom soon.
You don't want Cheetos on your
No.
lips.
God, you don't want the cheese dust.
No.
You know, it'll get on all the papers.
Right.
So I'm sitting there, and now it's about 9 o'clock where we're all supposed to be, and I'm looking at my watch like, when does this baby start? Let's get this show rolling.
Are there special instructions like you can't use your cell phone, you can't have a newspaper? Because a lot of times in courtrooms, they have that kind of attitude.
This isn't a courtroom. You're just sitting in like a gathering
room.
Yes.
Right.
And they even had a little piece of paper that showed you if you wanted to get on the Wi-Fi there, you could.
Oh.
Here was the password. So they weren't discouraging
anything.
That's
very accommodating.
They had WGN-TV Morning News on, so I got to watch Robin and the gang.
Good move.
It's so fun.
They're Chicago's must-watch morning news, Wendy.
And I never get to watch. So I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
My iPad's fully charged. I can play a little Candy Crush. This is going to be a great day.
You were in heaven.
I was. This was at about 9 o'clock. I'm like, I am ready to roll.
Yeah.
Well, at about 10 after, I'm like, what's going on? Why haven't they started this show? Come on, come on.
So just 10 minutes later?
Well, I was like, you know, shouldn't you be welcoming us? And so then at about 10 after, a lovely woman stands up and announces that there's a little orientation program, a little video you can watch to show you if you have any questions, this will be answered. Oh. So Chicago's own Lester Holt, who's no longer Chicago's own.
Yeah.
Is narrating this little video.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm like, hey, Lester, what's up? I'm watching. It's sure. Like, what do you do if you get chosen? Here is the defense. Here is the prosecution. Blah, blah, blah. I'm watching it. I'm like, okay, I'm really paying attention. Uh-huh. And so that video takes you till about 10 o'clock. So I'm like, okay, here it goes. I'm panel number 4. I'm ready to go. And sitting there, nothing happens. Watch a couple of the celebrity name games.
Yeah.
Which is a very funny show.
With Craig Ferguson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Watch 2 of those. So now we're at 11 o'clock, and I'm like, what is going on? They haven't called anyone yet.
Not a single person in that room had been questioned at that point.
No, but I was going to take someone down because as I was watching Celebrity Name Game, when you're in a group setting like that, you don't yell out the answers.
You're not supposed to. People did that.
Yeah, there was a guy who kept yelling out the answers.
That was a test, I think, to see who should be let go.
Oh, he was trying to get out of it?
Yeah, they watch the people, and they see if you're shouting out answers during Celebrity Name Game, you're free to leave. They don't need that kind of attitude in the courtroom.
Well, it was bugging me because I knew the answer before he did, but I didn't yell it out because you're trapped.
Right.
You want to play along. You don't want somebody ruining it.
Right. That's true. Good.
So
you should get points for that.
I didn't say anything to him.
Yeah.
I kept my mouth shut again, waiting and waiting. I was really taken by this one gentleman who looked like a heavyset Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles T-shirt. And slippers. Now, here's my question.
Good choice if you're looking to get out.
Is that what he's doing?
No, he doesn't want to be on the jury. So he says, what clothing can I put on that will give me the lowest amount of chance of being on a jury? And he went with the Teenage Mutant Ninja
and slippers.
And slippers. I like that guy.
Well, so I'm waiting and waiting. And then, you know, watch the midday news with Dina Bear and Steve Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow. This is great, you know. I now know what people would do if they don't have a job. They'd watch these, you know, WGN TV news.
Of course.
Wait for Maury to come on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden an announcement comes. I see a lot of moving, some people coming in, some professional-looking women coming in and talking to the little announcer lady. And I'm like, okay, they're about ready to get started here. But don't they break for lunch at noon?
You would think.
Well, now it's 11 o'clock, so what's happening? So at about, I'm just waiting, looking at the people, wondering what's going to happen.
What's the slightly overweight Denzel Washington doing during this?
He is walking around making faces, much like Winona Ryder.
Oh, he was?
Like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
He's talking to the people sitting next to him.
Well, he obviously has some sort of business to run. He can't just sit there all day.
What, a comic book shop?
Possibly. Maybe. Yeah, he's one of those CEO types. He can't just waste his day. Wait, can we take a quick break? Find out what happens next. Wendy's up for jury duty with an overweight Denzel Washington. Will either of them be selected? Find out in just moments. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's Bill and Wendy, and I've returned from my jury duty. I did want to be a professional juror.
I know you did. This meant a lot. You were looking forward to yesterday, all the last couple of months.
But other than Steve Cochran and Andrea Darlis, everyone else I said that to, including you and my son Michael, I'm like, I really want to be a juror. And everyone would go, said no one ever.
Yeah, I don't want any part of that.
I bet Steve Bertrand would like to be a juror. Have you ever been a juror?
A long, long time ago. No, and I never sat in. I was never chosen. No, I am not a juror person. I don't like to be responsible for judging.
That's what I was saying yesterday. There's so much pressure. What if you make the wrong call? What if it's a major, major case and you're sending somebody to jail?
And I'm the captain of gray area.
Yeah.
Well, I could see maybe, you
but
know.
But as Lester Holt explained to me in the video,
yeah.
You can't base...
Why doesn't he leave some jobs for other people?
I know, he's not here anymore. You're right. You know, I thought about that too, Steve. Like, how do this needs to be updated a bit.
There's some poor kid dying for a on-camera job.
Yeah,
Holt
I know.
Taking it.
Well, I wanted it.
I'm Lester Holt. I'll take it.
I would have worn a suit and everything with a skirt. And stand there like most news people do with their hands like kind of right in front of their waist.
Yeah, clenched in front of you, you're supposed
with
to.
With a cue card or an index card. Yeah. That's what like
it
a lot of people
how
do.
How official it is.
So what Lester Holt said in that video is you kind of have to leave your opinion aside and go with what is the law. So I'm like, I am so ready. I brought a legal notepad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did.
Good move.
I brought a book.
Yeah.
I was ready to go. And so I'm waiting there.
The scales of justice? Did you bring in a model of the scales of justice?
No, but I had a pin of that.
Oh, you did? All right.
I was wearing it.
Good.
And so I'm waiting and waiting, and now it's after 11 o'clock. And again, I'm seeing some movement with maybe some clerks coming in to talk to the main announcer woman.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is it. They're going to get started. And again, nothing. And I'm just sitting there, and I had fun for the first maybe 15 minutes, and then I thought, this really sucks to sit here all day.
You didn't see that coming?
I guess I did, but my enthusiasm masked that.
Yeah.
So now it's now about 11:45, and I'm thinking, okay, if they do have any court, you know, if they need any jurors... Or jurors.
Yeah.
It's going to be lunch break. So what they're going to do is probably release us for lunch. We're going to have to come back at 1 and sit here till 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
Right.
Well, they make this announcement saying, I'm not sure why this happened, ladies and gentlemen, but all the court cases were canceled today. So please line up. You can get your check and you will be dismissed. Thank you for serving. This
what?
Counts as your civic duty. I was so bummed. I was going to volunteer to come back today to see if they could put me on a jury. I didn't even get a chance to shine.
How does every court case get canceled in a
day? I don't know that. I've never heard of that.
No matter what your trial was going to be,
it was canceled.
They all
for
got
the day.
Canceled.
It's unheard of.
That doesn't happen ever.
But I did get my check.
Can I guess? Is it $17? How much is it?
You would have won the Price is Right showcase.
It is. This check is made out to you, and $17.20. You're rich.
I know.
Do you need a guard to take you to your car when
yes.
the show's over? All right, so be honest with me, because I know how excited you were
I really
to
was.
Potentially be a juror.
It's no joke. I really was.
It was a waste of your time. I mean, I know it
well,
could have
turned out to
it
be.
It could have turned out very, very differently, of course. But for all those people in the room, how many people were in that room?
Probably 150.
All right, so multiply that by $17.20. Wouldn't you say that was money wasted? The taxpayers are on the hook for all that money, and you guys wasted your time. We wasted all that taxpayer money. What was solved yesterday? That's terrible.
Well, yesterday nothing, but you know, and many times some of those people will get. But then I'm thinking, if this a little overweight Denzel Washington wearing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt and slippers.
He's already spent his $17.20, by the way.
Bought a new t-shirt. Got Speed Racer.
I was, for some reason in my head, I pictured him taking the check, cashing it, and getting a box of Fiddle Faddle, and I don't know why. It just made sense to me.
But if he, see, then I'm looking at that guy going, you know, if he got chosen, he is not going to put his all into this
no.
case.
No.
So you were judging in the juror room.
I was. Yeah. But then as I watched him talking to everybody next to him, I learned a lesson, because that's typically my role.
Yeah.
Hey, where are you from?
Yeah.
What do you got going on today? What did you miss? As I watched him and watched the disgust of the people next to him, they didn't want to talk to him. I learned a lesson that maybe I'm not going to bother people anymore.
Oh. Look, this was worth the $17.20.
It so, kind of was.
Let me pay you $17.20.
You don't when count.
Does that start today?
Right. No,
when does that start?
Clearly
yeah.
it's going to be tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. No, it doesn't count if I know you, but you know, oh. if I'm sitting on anywhere. When I take a cab, I always talk to the cab driver, and he's like, yeah, all right, Blondie, shut up.
You won't be able to stick to this.
I'm going
to
try.
There's
because
no way.
I'll feel people out first and see if they look up for a conversation.
You always have to say hello before you feel them out, just so you know.
Right.
All right, Sandy, you were a juror, weren't you? Was it as great as I thought it was going to be?
Actually, it really was. I was a jury foreman on a double homicide with an attempted murder.
Holy crap, and you
nice.
Were the foreman, too.
Yes, I was, and I have to tell you, it was as incredible as you would have thought it was. I really enjoyed it. I think it just depends on your personality, though.
How long did it take for you guys to come to some sort of a verdict? Did it take a long time?
Actually, we ran 5 days okay, on the original section.
Yeah.
Because what happened, because it was also with the death penalty.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot of
pressure.
Oh, it was. That's the only downside is I don't think I realized that portion.
Yeah.
Sitting on a jury, you know, for the double homicide, which is horrible as it is.
Sure.
You know, yes, that's pressure. But then to know that depending on what you decide, that's even a larger pressure.
Did they show you all kinds of pictures, really gruesome pictures of things that, that you needed to see for the case?
Oh, yeah.
They
absolutely.
Did?
Yeah. It was, actually, it happened on a playground out in the city. They literally just came out there with an AK-47 and just started shooting.
Oh, my God.
But see, it seems like the facts are there, so it wouldn't be that hard to determine guilty or not guilty. The thing that blew me away is listening to Lester Holt saying, you know, civil case, there's probably not going to be evidence. There could be.
Yeah.
In a criminal case, there will be. And you have to realize that the particular person is innocent until proven guilty.
Sure, of course.
Which it's got to be hard because you hear this story right away. It seems like you've made a judgment.
Well, I agree, but you know what? You also don't realize that they have a defense attorney. And to be honest, after the trial was over, we were able to talk to his defense attorney separately.
Yeah.
You know, to go over things. And you wouldn't realize, I know their job is to try and get their client off for whatever it is.
Right. I mean, that's their job to defend them.
Right, and you presume his innocence, but a lot of times you don't realize that sometimes they go into a gray area where they'll bring up other names, names that has nothing to do with the case, just to possibly give you that section of doubt where you would find him innocent.
Right.
Well, pretty interesting. I'm pretty bummed I wasn't chosen. Sandy, thank you for doing your civic duty. I hope I get called again.
You'll get
said
called
no one other than me.
You will get called again. I'm sure you left a lasting impression on them. They'll be anxious to see you again.
I didn't even get a chance. I would have been the best juror ever.
I know.
All right.
We'll take a quick break.
The good news is I'm here.
That's the good news. All right. And look at the check you have.
$17.20. Give it back, by the way.
Oh, you need it back? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. I am back from jury duty, not chosen. Pretty bummed about that.
You have to stop blaming yourself.
I can't blame myself because they didn't even take me into the juror room.
I know. You'll get a second chance.
I was talking to my husband about this, and Jim says, you know, I don't want to be on a juror. And I said, I don't want to be on a jury. And I said, you're going to be the one who's chosen.
Right.
And you're going to be sleeping during the trial.
There's
you're
going to
sneak in your earbuds. You're not,
right.
You're so not going to pay attention.
Right.
He could never be on my jury, right? Like if I was tried for a crime.
Oh,
you can't be related,
not.
Obviously.
Yeah,
right,
they
good.
Usually don't want a relative on the jury.
I hope you don't get him.
There's a bigger chance of that because he and I are not related.
He'd be a terrible juror.
Well, you don't know. Sometimes jurors will surprise you. I bet
he wouldn't listen. He wouldn't pay attention.
Just keep doing that thing with your hand where you go blah 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 blah, like during the whole witness testimony, just blah 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 blah.
D.B. Sweeney joining us, actor D.B. Sweeney. How are you, sir? We're talking about jury duty. I went yesterday and they didn't choose me.
I know. I heard you. That's. I would be so disappointed if I was on trial and I didn't get you because you seem like you were really
good
into
juror,
it,
right?
I would be. Ever since I watched The People versus O.J. Simpson, it really kind of gave me newfound love to be a juror.
I've never had it, and I've always
you
been
haven't?
Curious about it. And I don't even know why I don't get. Oh, I'm not going to say anything, but I don't get summoned. But
not even a summons.
Many years ago, I got one, and I had a lawyer write a letter say he travels too much and take him off the list. But that was when I lived in New York, so I don't
really?
Know.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, Wendy was wearing a beer can hat. Don't you think that's the kind
no,
of thing that
I
if
I wanted
you're...
to be chosen.
Yeah?
I did not have that.
Right.
No, I did not. How are you, sir?
I couldn't be better. I had a little downtown Chicago parking adventure. I don't normally drive my car down here, and that was
and there's no parking spaces.
Was a bad decision.
It'll cost you, just to do the half hour with us, it'll cost you $60 to park.
I thought about double parking in front of the Lithuanian consulate because I thought I could look Lithuanian.
You could.
I think I could. But
you're an actor. Yeah. You can look any nationality you want.
I just was afraid I should have a Lotto or something. Like some. I didn't have the right car. Like a Dodge Durango is probably not going to sell.
Not big in Lithuania. No.
Although if it was black, it would look like you were escorting some of the Lithuanian
I gotta get a
consulate
car.
People around. That is it. Bill, do you remember when Peanut Tillman came up on the studio? He came into the studio and there's like a little turnaround right by the river. He just parked his car there and walked over.
Right on Michigan Avenue.
Did he get towed?
No.
Nope.
He
good
probably
to be Peanut.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't do that for 5 seconds. He was here for half an hour. And didn't even watch it. Like my eyes would be glued on the car the whole time.
Oh, he didn't care.
He didn't look.
I guess he's got a fleet, and if they take that one, I'll just park something else tomorrow.
Last time we saw you, you were in town because Chirac was coming out. We haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah. I'm a Western suburb resident now, so I drive by you all the time and listen to you. But I'm here for the movie, The Resurrection of Gavin Stone.
We have watched the previews for it. It looks like a pretty good movie. And my friend Neil Flynn is also in it.
Yeah, Neil's terrific.
Isn't he a good guy?
Really good guy. I didn't know him. I had met him briefly because I had friends on Scrubs.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd said hello, but I'd never really hung out with him. He really does a great job in the movie. He plays the dad to Gavin Stone.
Now, I'm worried about the age difference there because is Neil old enough to be that guy's dad? That's tight.
Well, biologically.
I guess.
They're
actors.
They're acting. Everyone's. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, Brett Dalton, I think, looks like he's 27, 28
years
about old.
That. And, so know. I guess it's possible. Yeah.
We're old enough to be our producer Kevin's parents. Does it look like we could be? No. All right, don't answer.
No reason to answer. How did this come about for you? What was going on that you got this role?
Dallas Jenkins, the director of the movie, lives nearby. He lives near Elgin. That's where his church is. And I knew him from California. We both moved here around the same time. And he said, I'm doing this movie. Would you like to look at it? And I know Dallas is he's a very serious Christian guy. He's also a very funny guy, a very smart guy, a lot of other things. But I knew that his movie was probably going to be a Christian movie. And I, as much as I am a Christian and I, you know, that's my faith as well. I, a lot of the movies come off really stiff and stodgy and preachy.
Kirk Cameron, if you're listening.
Exactly.
Yeah, mixing a joke from time to time. So, anyway,
Catholics and Christians can be funny.
And that's the great thing about this movie is that it's a fish out of water story. Brett Dalton plays this guy who is given community service. You can either pick up trash on the highway or go volunteer at the church.
Yeah.
He chooses the church because he's a scammer and he feels like those are the people who he's going to be able to push around. And as soon as he gets in the door, he sees they're casting the role of Jesus in the Easter pageant. He's like, and he's a former child star, so he's a washed up actor, and or soon to be washed up, I guess, in the narrative of things. And so he figures, I'll resuscitate my career, get my community service, and it'll be on my merry way. And the church, I'm the pastor, and we're not such pushovers. We sort of realize that he's a scammer, but we think, you know what? Let's just let him go his way here. Let's see if speaking these words, maybe they have some impact on him.
Perfect.
It looked really good. I am Catholic. I don't go to church as much as I should, but it doesn't look all preachy. It looks funny. It looks really good.
Yeah, it really is good. And that's why, I don't get out and bang the drum about many movies because I feel silly doing it. Mm-hmm. I feel like, who's this idiot on the radio telling me I should, waste 2 hours of my life on something. And, but this time when I saw the final movie, it makes fun of believers, non-believers. It's a great fish out of water story. Neil Flynn's terrific in it. We got Shawn Michaels, WWE Hall of Famer in it. And it's really good. It's like, I hate to say it, so surprised, but with people who are sort of like reticent to say, I want to go see that movie because it feels like a faithy movie.
Yeah.
It's that, yes, if you're a Christian, it's the full 7-course dinner. But for non-Christians, it's really funny.
Well, it says in the press release, inspirational comedy. And I thought to myself, I don't remember the last time, if ever, I've seen a movie billed as that, as inspirational comedy.
It's unusual. It's very unusual. But, as I've talked to Dallas about many times, Hollywood used to make movies that were moral and not necessarily preachy, but we had good guys and bad guys.
It's a Wonderful Life fits that description, doesn't
you're right.
it?
That would be a faith-based movie if it came out today. And they would put quotes around it and they'd stick it in the Christian ghetto and you'd have to fight your way out of it. Try to get yourself on Kimmel or something, but against all odds.
The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, and we are talking to D.B. Sweeney right now. When is this, when's the release?
It came out, we're coming up on our third weekend, and we did okay the first weekend. It was up against the inauguration, which I think maybe was not the best idea because I think people might be interested in a Christian movie might also be interested in, you know, the,
sure,
the peaceful transfer of power and patriotic things like that. But and then the second weekend, we came up against all the Oscar movies. Once they announced the nominations,
right,
all the movies come out. And
well, you're in good shape this weekend because there's no major sports contests of any kind being played.
Yeah, we got nothing.
So you're going to be fine.
No, on Sunday, I think everybody's going to be looking for a movie. So
they are.
You know,
yes,
I mean,
they are.
There's nothing going on, and you know, we got a little snake bit on that regard. But I thought we were in the clear last weekend because there were no good new movies coming out. Really, I mean, there was.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the McConaughey movie was coming out.
Right.
But that wasn't Matt McConaughey. That was Fat McConaughey. And so, anytime an actor goes bald or puts on weight, it doesn't work.
It doesn't
I was
count.
In Tropic Thunder. I mean, if you go skinny, like skinny Matt, give him the trophy. You know, they did, and they did,
right?
Like,
right.
But and normal Matt, all the girls go. But Fat McConaughey is a loser, and that was dead on arrival. So I thought we're going to sneak through last weekend. But you know, but the movie's really good, and I hope people go. And it is really fun. And I have a 12-year-old daughter. I took her to the premiere. She's never been to a Hollywood premiere. It was a Chicago Hollywood premiere,
yeah,
but, which is even better.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And we were trying to go to the movies a couple weeks ago, and it was like, what do we go to? And we'd already seen Fantastic Beasts. There's no Pixar movie out. And it's like, there's nothing. It's like Trolls. Come on. What
yeah.
am I, seven?
No,
so this is a movie you can go to, and it's fun, and you know, and it's a really entertaining movie.
Have you been a part of anything on movies or TV that you're reluctant for your kids to see? I can't think of anything you've done that your kids couldn't see.
My kids have seen like three movies I'm in. I really wanted them to have a normal,
yeah,
you know, a normal dad. And so, you know, every once in a while people recognize me at the airport or whatever. And
sure.
They say, oh, wow, dad just got skipped in the line. That's kind of cool. And so they sort of have an awareness. And now they're older. You know, my son's 15, my daughter's 12. So they, you know, they know what my job is and they get it. But I never wanted them to know me as like a guy in movies or TV. So
it's better.
So, yeah. So most of everything I've seen, they haven't seen. They've seen The Cutting Edge. They've seen this movie, Dinosaur, animated movie I did.
Mm-hmm.
My son has seen 8 Men Out because he was playing baseball.
Mm.
But other than that, I pretty much kept them away from it. I thought it's better to do your homework.
Yep.
Speaking of The Cutting Edge, Sandy, you wanted to talk to D.B. Sweeney?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, my mom just loves the movie The Cutting Edge. I called because she just got out of the hospital for 109 days. And honestly, that was on the Family Channel like 3 days ago. And all I've heard for the last 5 days is toe picks.
Well, I hope your mom's doing better.
Oh, she's doing really good. She's got an artificial heart, and she's just moving along. But, like, if you drop anything, toe pick.
Oh, that's great. Well, if she's got an artificial heart, we could probably get her a job as a Hollywood producer. If she's looking to work now.
Sandy, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate
Wasn't
it.
Wasn't that movie directed, maybe I'm imagining it, by Starsky from Starsky?
It was.
Paul Michael Glazer.
Paul Michael Glazer,
that.
Yeah. And he did a great job. And yeah. The script was by Tony Gilroy, who is now, you know, the Bourne Identity and Michael Collins.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the great writers, Dolores Claiborne.
Yeah.
So many great movies. He's a great writer.
That's excellent.
All right. I want to go back to the premiere, the Chicago premiere that you had of The Resurrection of Gavin Stone. You bring your 12-year-old daughter. Did you get a big ball gown or something really fashionable for the red carpet?
There was a lot of people there in tuxedos, and I didn't put on a tuxedo, so I felt kind of bad because I didn't want to be the only guy there with a tuxedo. So, and then I realized I was the only guy without a tuxedo. So, but yeah, my daughter bought a new dress. It was very exciting. My wife was there, and it was really a fun night.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
So I know that you've wanted to keep them out of the show business limelight, but on a night like that, it's got to feel good. Their heart has to beat fast for you.
Yeah, I had seen the movie a week earlier. I showed the movie at Fort Hood in Texas for the soldiers because I feel like even if it was a bad movie, they'll still appreciate it, and I get to go shake hands and say thanks. I saw the movie, and it was really good, and I thought, oh, man, now we go to the premiere, and it's good.
Yeah.
I've been to screenings in California of movies, and halfway through it, you're like, I just hope there's a tunnel under my seat. How can I get out of here without offending anybody? And the movie was really good, so it was a really, really
That's
fun
a plus.
Night.
Yeah. Good.
We have to take a quick break. We're talking to D.B. Sweeney. He is in the studio. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are joined in studio by actor D.B. Sweeney. I could read you his credits, but you'd be late for work. So just trust me. He's been in a whole bunch of stuff. He's got a new movie it's already out. It's The Resurrection of Gavin Stone. It's an inspirational comedy. DB, they always talk about how actors, if you're serious about being in films and TV, you have to live in Los Angeles or you have to live in New York. You can't live in the middle. But you've done really, really well living in the middle of the country.
Yeah, touch wood. It's been good for the last few years since I got here, and I'm starting another movie in a few weeks here in Chicago called Captive State, which John Goodman's in it and Vera Farmiga, and it's a great big alien movie, and I don't think I'm allowed to say too much more. I think
you've already sold me on what you've told us. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah, John Goodman's one of the great ones, and so just that he's in it, I think it's he's one of those actor bait guys. So yeah. I think it's going to be fun. They're going to turn Chicago into some post-apocalyptic alien. The aliens have scorched the earth, and it's the resistance, something like that.
I can't wait.
Who do you play in this, by the way?
I don't know yet.
They won't tell you who you play.
No, I think I'm working for the bugs. I don't know.
If you need a chatty alien, I would like to volunteer my services.
You got that move? Yeah. Will you bring the legal pad?
Yeah. Yes.
But then it'll say in the credits, yeah. Talky alien with legal pad, and then we'll go, I know her. I work with her.
Well, it's got to be fun to be able to kind of pick and choose what you want to do. You've done a whole career of doing some great things, and now with the resurrection of Gavin Stone, it's got to be cool to go, yeah, I want to do this.
It's, about 15 years ago, I've been doing this more than 30 years now, which is crazy. I started to really enjoy being on the set more and more. It came to me very quickly when I started out, and there's a lot of pressure when you're the main character, and will the movie open, and all these other things. And now I've become sort of... I really look forward to going to the set, and it's not in my control how the movie turns out. And when it turns out great, like Gavin Stone did, mm-hmm. awesome. And when it doesn't, I find value like talking to people on the set and just enjoying the whole process.
Fun.
It's a great life.
You always hear actors talk about the downtime. They go, "Oh, sure, you're there and you're in a trailer, but there's so much downtime," and there is. But you can use that to your advantage. Just hang out with the other people. It's a good time.
You don't have to be in the trailer. Right. That's all the people that you watch who are crazy on TV at the award shows. They spend too much time in their trailer. Looking in the mirror at how great they are. And if you get out of the trailer and go talk to the guy who's making the coffee, he's probably a cool guy or girl. And we're going to film in Chicago. We're going to be in Pilsen and Wicker Park and all these great neighborhoods. And so just walk down the street and go talk to somebody.
Live it up. Have a good time.
It is fun to do.
Oh,
I'm always scared to approach people, though.
Yeah.
I know, me. But I am when it's
celebrities.
I like
your new policy, though. I like to see if you get an indication that they're interested in a conversation.
Yeah.
And then launch in. And I think that's the way to go.
DB, what actor have you worked with that you've learned the most from? Who did you do scenes with that you just go, I have to learn from this guy or this girl? They know what they're doing.
Well, James Earl Jones on Gardens of Stone was really great, and he didn't say much. He just was so present for me, and he knew that I was trying to figure it out on the run, and I didn't really, I'd done a lot of plays, but I had never been on a big movie set like that. And he just stayed there. And again, like not going to the trailer, like it takes, that was Jordan Cronenworth, the great director of photography, lighting that thing. And he was a lot of things, but he was not fast. So there was a lot of lighting time and it was always worth it. It was beautiful. But, a lot of the actors ran back to their trailers and
hide out. James Caan in that too?
James Caan was in that, and he'd go back to the trailer and everybody else would, And so I would just sort of sit there and try to learn what they were doing with all these lights and what was happening. And James Earl Jones would just stay there with me. And we wouldn't talk. There were no phones yet where everybody's on their phone. Just sort of sit there and maybe practice the lines a little bit. Just hang out and just be there. And he was saying to me, look, everybody has a first starring role and you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And without saying it. And
it was
good. Great.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's get this call in real quickly. Jim wanted to talk to D.B. Sweeney. Jim, go ahead. We only have about a minute.
DB, I'll be real quick. What an honor it is to talk with you. I was, my father, right before he died, he wanted me to take him to the movie The Memphis Belle. And so when I took him to The Memphis Belle, I realized that in World War II, he was one of the guys who painted all the lady, the arts on all the B-17 bombers. So when we were sitting in the movie, the part where you were in the bathroom, being sick because you knew you had to go on that flight, he was squeezing my hand, and I didn't realize that I was sitting right next to a guy who knew those guys, and you did a great portrayal of that part.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. The people that served in the 8th Air Force in World War II, or some of the, even with Memphis Belle and the other things that have come out about it, there's the unsung heroes. That was the most dangerous job for an American soldier in the Second World War. We had more than 10% of our casualties came from the 8th Air Force, and those people were great heroes. And you were sitting duck. Those planes, they had machine guns, but you're sitting. The whole strategy was predicated on sitting there and letting them attack you and hopefully not shoot too many of you down.
Jeez.
And it's amazing sitting in the movie theater and having an old man, a 90-year-old man, holding your hand and squeezing it, realize it's the same man that was squeezing one of those 50 caliber guns. I'm sitting right next to a hero and didn't even know it.
That's so cool. What a great story.
A bone chilling. But DB, thank you so much. I enjoyed all your movies.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Do you ever think of that? I mean, that look at the impact you made on Jim, who just called to say that, and his father.
Yeah, it was my uncle was a navigator on the B-17, and so when I got to, that was one of the few movies where they let me choose which part to play, and I chose the navigator because that was my uncle.
Yeah,
as a tribute to him, and so many people that served in that era, and people that serve now, and it's really exciting. I mentioned earlier, I got to go to Fort Hood, and just to say thanks to the people, because so few of us serve as a nation, you know, less than 1% of us.
Yeah.
Put on the uniform and raise our hand, and I just think we got to remember it all the time. So to his dad and to all the other dads and husbands and wives out there that are serving, my eternal gratitude.
Beautiful.
What a good man. Why can't you be more like DB Sweeney?
I can't be like you, DB. I've tried. I cannot be anywhere near as good. The Resurrection of Gavin Stone is the name of the movie, playing in theaters now. Go and see it. It's an inspirational comedy, and as DB pointed out, it's a lot of fun. Good for everybody. Great to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you guys so much having me on. It's so fun.
Really appreciate
it.
You're in the area.
You want.
You can come by whenever.
Thank you.
All right, you got it. We'll take a quick break. We'll get some news in and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Steve, is Steve Bertrand? Yeah. Are you around, Steve Bertrand?
No, he's
got
to go.
I got a minute for you. I got to go, Minch.
Oh, you have a minute for him, but not for me.
I said I could do a minute. You've already wasted 30
seconds.
For
both of us, Steve.
Yeah.
Explain just a little bit of what we heard. You played a little audio of Donald Trump saying that at this prayer breakfast that the prayers need to go out to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Do you still? I don't know if you still have that.
Yeah.
Handy.
Well, the point is, Mark Burnett introduced him, and Burnett's the creator of all of.
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice. But what was the big show he started with was Survivor.
Survivor.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, Trump had to leave when he started running, and he has been replaced recently by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he likes to point out often that his ratings were better than Arnold Schwarzenegger's. The question many are saying is, was the National Prayer Breakfast the place for
that?
They
hired a big, big movie star, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to take my place. And we know how that turned out. The ratings went right down the tubes.
Disaster.
It's been a total disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark will never, ever bet against Trump again. And I want to just pray for Arnold, if we can, for those ratings, okay?
So that prompted Schwarzenegger to respond on different social media platforms saying, why don't we switch jobs? You take over TV because you're such an expert in ratings, and I take over your job. Then people can finally sleep comfortably again.
Oh, man.
And then he wrote National Prayer Breakfast with a question mark.
Which is right. Why are you doing that there? Why are you the president? I mean, stick to TV. You're great and very entertaining. It's so wrong.
He just seems to need constant reinforcement.
I get that. I'm like that too. But I'm not. That's
not
why
president.
I'm not running for president.
You're not
I just want to be a juror, for God's sakes.
I love that hoodie you're wearing today, Wendy.
You know, people texted in, I think you brought this up about a week or so ago, that when we have referred to Hillary Clinton, we have said Hillary Clinton. And whenever we refer to Trump, we just say Trump. Or whenever we talk about Barack Obama, we say President Obama. But whenever we talk about Trump, we just say Trump.
I know.
He calls himself Trump.
I know.
He just refers to himself in the third person all the time, just as Trump. He just did it in that clip. He just says Trump. He doesn't say President Trump or me. He just says Trump.
Well, I have the Arnold Schwarzenegger if we want to hear it.
I would love to hear it. And by the way, that potential switch of jobs... I know that President Trump was not comfortable with Barack Obama's president because he believed he was born in another country. I don't know that because of the lineage of Arnold Schwarzenegger, he would be eligible to be the president of the United States. I don't think. Was he born in Austria?
Bill,
all bets are off now.
Yeah,
Anything can happen
now. I'm telling you, Kanye is going to be our next president.
That's fine.
And Kim will be the vice president.
That's
you know what?
Interesting.
It could happen.
Yeah.
Here's Arnold on his Twitter page.
Hey, Donald, I have a great idea. Why don't we switch jobs? You take over TV because you're such an expert in ratings, and I take over your job, and then people can finally sleep comfortably again.
All right, you tell me. He sounds legitimately upset, doesn't he?
Because he probably is. And why did they choose? So Mark Burnett chose Arnold when Donald Trump wasn't doing it anymore. President Trump didn't have a say so in it. I'm sure he did.
I think Donald Trump still has some sort of credit in the show. I think he's some sort of
loosely based on the life of.
Well, on paper, that switch makes sense because you have a guy who is kind of in the vein of Donald Trump, a guy who has some political background. He was the governor of California and has some force to him. So you say to yourself on paper, who would we get to replace Donald Trump in this scenario? He's leaving to run for the presidency. When they announced it, I think a lot of people went, yeah, all right, that'll make sense. Donald Trump now, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I understand that. It hasn't worked out well in the ratings for whatever reason. But maybe Donald Trump hosting the show, maybe it was time for that show to fade away.
Yeah. So I was had a couple of questions about the National Prayer Breakfast because you hear it and you hear clips from it every year, and I didn't really know how it got started. The annual multi-faith breakfast is held on the first Thursday of February each year. Lawmakers and religious leaders from about 70 countries gather at the Washington event, first organized in 1953. The purpose of it is to bring bipartisan political leaders and their religious counterparts together to meet, pray, and build relationships.
You get priests and rabbis and ministers together, and other than jokes, that rarely happens.
You're right. So there's a priest and a rabbi,
right.
And what else?
And a minister, and they go into a bar. In this case, the
they wouldn't go into a bar.
They're doing jokes. They're always going to a bar and
they
jokes.
Go into Manny's.
Right.
Every president since Dwight D. Eisenhower has headlined this event. Trump used his remarks to weigh in on reports circulating on his phone calls with foreign leaders from Australia and Mexico. And here's something he said as well. President Donald Trump, this is from CNN. Is that fake news or real news?
I think that's fake news.
Okay. A quote, "When you hear about the tough phone calls I'm having, don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. They're tough. We have to be tough. It's time we're going to be a little tough, folks." And then he added, Donald Trump added, "We're taken advantage of by every nation in the world virtually."
Okay.
It's not going to happen anymore. It's not going to happen anymore. End scene.
Do you feel that the United States is being taken advantage of unfairly by virtually every nation in the world?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't see how you can say that with a straight face. We're not being taken advantage of by virtually every nation in the world. It's just the opposite.
And who did he hang up on from Australia? The chancellor from Australia. He hung
the
up
prime
on,
minister.
Prime minister of Australia.
Prime minister?
He hung up on them and then tweeted
good.
About it, right? Or we just got wind of that. Because this is the stuff that makes me nervous.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad Matthew McConaughey has now stepped up to the plate and said, hey, he's our president. You're going
to support him, Matthew McConaughey.
Well, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm just starting to listen to some of the and he's been busy. He's had a busy couple of weeks or less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some things. But I find myself going, what?
That's
not
come
that
up.
It's. Bad? It's just, this is just really all shocking to me.
There's a series of jolts. We have to take a break, but I want to play for you some audio that I've put together that I think shows an incredible double standard. All right? So that's coming up in just a little bit. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger and Donald Trump. There's a little issue going on. Donald Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast was President Trump. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. You're fine.
He said at this National Prayer service, this meeting, that, you know, he wants people to pray for Arnold because the ratings it's become a disaster.
Right.
Since Trump is gone and since Arnold is there. And Arnold had this to say in retaliation.
Hey, Donald, I have a great idea. Why don't we switch jobs? You take over TV because you're such an expert in ratings, and I take over your job, and then people can finally sleep comfortably again.
He does.
He sounds upset. Do you want to upset Arnold Schwarzenegger? I don't.
Well, Tom has a theory. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, this is Ralph. How are you, Wendy?
Oh, hi, Ralph.
Hi, Ralph. What's up?
This is President Trump. This guy is the best salesperson, the best showman in the world. And you know he has a little bit of piece of the action of the Celebrity Apprentice, and he wants the show to be successful. He probably has a little stake in some kind. This is the best wag the dog thing I've ever seen, because now millions and millions of people know about this, and guess who's going to be tuning in to watch the Celebrity Apprentice?
It created controversy, and that's what he wanted to do, you think, huh?
That's what he always does. I mean, there's a There's a video out on YouTube with Jerry Lewis being interviewed recently. He's in his 90s. Well, what do you think about President Trump? He goes, I love the guy. He's a consummate showman. He'll get things done. He's not afraid to fail. And he knows what he's doing, this guy. He's got all the attributes of, you know, of a showman, for sure.
Of P.T. Barnum.
Exactly.
Right? Well, thank you. We appreciate it, Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph, a.k.a. Tom. Mary wants to talk about this, too. Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Wendy?
Great.
Okay. I've been listening to you, and your conversation is mostly focused on what he said about Arnold. But Arnold may not be his primary target.
Who's he shooting for?
Mark Burnett.
Oh, maybe. There's something
because,
to that.
Yeah. He said, and this will teach Mark Burnett not to bet against Trump. And during the campaign, when the god-awful tapes of 2005 came out, and people were trying to get Mark Burnett to release outtapes from The Apprentice.
Right.
To see, you know, how Trump interacted with women on the show when the cameras weren't going. And Mark Burnett could not do that. He would say, you know, oh, I can't do it. Of course, he was legally bound to, he's got a non-disclosure thing, as everybody does that deals with Trump. And he'd say, I cannot do it. I legally can't do it. Believe me, if I could, I would.
Hmm.
He'd say, I'm not a Trump fan. If I could give these tapes to you, I would.
So this was a lesson more toward Mark Burnett than it was toward Arnold Schwarzenegger, you believe?
Yeah, it was a twofer.
Yeah.
Should we be doing these lessons at the National Prayer Meeting?
No.
No. Oh, my golly. and first of all, he talks about how he's there to give everybody religious freedom. Oh, gag me with a spoon, you know?
Do you remember, Mary, it was Tom Arnold who said that he had some outtakes of Mr. Trump saying some incredibly racist things, and they were mm-hmm. going to release them, and then for one reason or another, they just never
got it. Tom
got
a big check in the mail? Is that
what
happened?
I have no idea what happened.
Tom's income is not as high as it used to be.
No,
he doesn't have Roseanne anymore.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Mary, we got to run. Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay, love listening to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, you as well.
All right. Can I play this for you? We have to go back in time to last week. Charles Schumer was speaking. Now, this was at the time of the Muslim ban, and Charles Schumer was speaking.
It's not a Muslim.
It's not a
ban.
It's not a ban.
It's not. But it's not due to religion. It was just due to the countries.
Right. Right. And we're not supposed to say ban. We've been instructed not to use the word ban, even though they are using the word ban.
What have we been instructed to say?
Did you?
It's
hear
a
the,
pause. That's it, what they're. That's
it's
what
a
they
pause,
want it to be said.
But. We were instructed that the media keeps saying ban, but it's not a ban. But the Republicans themselves kept saying the word ban to describe it. But it is a pause. We're not supposed to say pause.
Oh, my God. All right.
So Charles Schumer is speaking, and he gets a little emotional as he's recounting exactly what is going on at airports across the country. There are Muslim people up on stage with him, and he's noticeably shaken by the turn of events. Listen to that part.
Give me your tired. You're poor, you're huddled masses yearning to breathe free. What we should ask. So, this executive order was mean-spirited and un-American. It was implemented in a way that created chaos and confusion.
All right, so that's Charles Schumer the other day talking about the pause, not the ban, but the pause. He's getting a little shaken up, as you can hear. Donald Trump wants none of that. He says he's acting, that he's not that emotional, or is he? Listen to Donald Trump commenting on it.
I noticed Chuck Schumer yesterday with fake tears. I'm going to ask him who is his acting coach, because I know him very well. I don't see him as a crier. If he is, he's a different man.
Cut it there, because this is the point I want to make. This is Donald Trump criticizing Schumer for the fact that he might be a different man, as he called him, that he's crying. He's showing too much emotion, and there's no room for crying in baseball. You don't cry in baseball. Now let's cut to Gorsuch, who may or may not be our next Supreme Court justice, as he is telling the story about him learning about the death of Antonin Scalia, and listen to how he handled it.
The world suffered a seismic shock with the loss of Justice Scalia. A few weeks ago, I was taking a breather in the middle of a ski run with little on my mind but the next mogul field before me when the phone rang with the news. I immediately lost what breath I had left, and I'm not embarrassed to admit that I couldn't see the rest of the way down the mountain for the tears.
What? Was he crying? Was he showing emotion? Maybe he's not the man that Donald Trump thought he was.
Neil Gorsuch was crying real tears. Whereas,
is that the difference?
And, you know, if you listen to Chuck Schumer and he is reading what it says on the Statue of Liberty, it is upsetting. It's like, in your heart, that's not what America's supposed to be.
Right.
Yes, we have to protect our borders. Yes, we have to protect each other. But it seems like there could be a better way to do it.
Right.
So Chuck Schumer, I don't think, is that great of an actor. You can tell he's getting choked up. That's not fake.
No, I don't think so.
And real men cry.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
Yeah.
I'm sure Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, has cried when someone took his toys away.
I wonder.
I'm serious. I bet he has cried. Maybe he doesn't let anyone see him, but humans, you can't control that
exactly.
Emotion.
Sure.
You feel that lump in your throat. Your lip quivers. Sometimes, you know, something happens that makes that gets this emotion to come out of you beyond your control.
But his range of emotions is a very narrow range. We've talked about the fact that no one has seen him laugh. We've seen him smile, that sinister smile. That Simon Bar Sinister underdog smile. We've seen that, but we've not seen him laugh. So maybe his spectrum of emotions isn't quite as wide as the rest of ours. Maybe he doesn't laugh or cry, and he's really willing to criticize somebody who does, unless it's a guy that he likes. Then the crying is fine.
And I'm sorry, yes, maybe we haven't seen him laugh or cry. It's pretty much one look. It's called the scowl.
Right.
But he will not. We don't know what he's like when he's not in front of the cameras or in front of his Twitter feed. Because I'm sorry, man. There are people that are like that they shall not see me laugh or cry. I'm in total control.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Bottom line, Bill, real men cry.
I'm all for it.
I know you are, you know, you cry at movies a lot.
The Great Muppet Caper. All right, we'll take a quick break. News is next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Before we introduce Patrick McDonald, I just have to ask Kim a quick question in the newsroom. When introducing you, I just said Kim. Of course, I know your last name is Gordon.
I know. I was a little taken aback by that. I was like, wait, is he going to say something else?
Someone's getting thrown under the bus.
No. I want to make sure that it's okay, you know, in the interest of time. I thought I'll just say Kim. We'll save ourselves a half of a second right there, and we'll have more time to goof around. But
it's not because it said Steve on your thing?
It said Steve. It always says Steve on the sheet, even when it's Kim. But I looked up, and I saw that it was Kim. But I just thought, let's just make it more personal right now and just say Kim. That's fine. But, yeah, there was a pause, and I apologize.
Right. No problem.
Happy anniversary.
Just thought you were, thank you. I thought you were going to say something else. And that's
it did
why
sound
I,
like you weren't finished.
Yeah.
No, I was finished.
Just cut it off at Kim and
yeah
done.
All right, we'll do it that way. Thank you, Kim and Kim Gordon, and happy anniversary to you and your husband.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick is the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's also the chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. How are you, Patrick? Nice to see you.
Good, Bill and Wendy.
Thank you for being
here. Hello, Pat.
Hello.
We're a couple weeks removed from the Academy Awards. They're on at the end of February.
Yes.
And I know you want to discuss this. There is a backlash going on for the movie that is favored to be the top winner of the Academy Awards, La La Land. What's going on there?
Well, basically, it's about the separation between those who nominate films in Los Angeles and film critics themselves and the actual audience who goes and sees them. Now, this happens a lot during the Academy Awards season, that something will come out of the Golden Globes and it will be highly hyped, a la 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 Land. And
it's hard to say.
There you go. And the Jero audience picks up on it. It expands to 2,000 screens, as La La Land did. And suddenly they're like, what is the deal here? Yeah. Why is this getting so much hype? And in fact, the Washington Post kind of put some reasons together. And the first one, the movie's a little dull. it kind of, in the middle, kind of gets a little sticky.
There's
a lull.
There is a lull in the middle of La La Land.
Not dull, lull.
La La Land. That's what the middle should have been called, La La Land.
I still really enjoyed it immensely.
I loved it.
And again, I did too. And I think, again, just like everything else, it's about, your own personal perspective on things. But, audiences, especially around Academy Award time, your typical moviegoer wants to be in on it.
You know,
they want to be in on what's going on. And oftentimes they are surprised when they go and see the actual film and they're like, what is the hype about this? You know?
Yeah.
So.
All right. But how often is the movie that's the most popular movie of the year also the Academy Award winner for best film? That doesn't happen very often.
Not often.
Last year, the winner was The Revenant, which I thought was the best movie of the year. It's the best movie I saw all year.
It's a really intense, interesting film, but...
But that had mixed. There were a lot of people going, this is the best movie of the year? And then other people went, of course it is. What else could beat this movie?
Well, you have tastemakers in L.A. They're the nominators. They're the eventual voters. And tastemakers aren't exactly in tune with the general movie population in my viewpoint over the last 8 years as a critic. And I get a lot of, you hear from people, my dad especially, he just doesn't understand all the, he really imbued my love for movies because he loved movies himself, but he doesn't analyze them. He said, why do you overanalyze them so much? Yeah. But
that is your job. You're a film critic, so you kind of have to.
Well, this is even before my job. Oh. So.
All right.
We've had this discussion for years.
But I'll tell you what, when Wendy and I have talked about this a couple times, the movie that won Best Picture 2 years ago was a movie called Birdman.
Yes.
And that was the worst movie I saw 2 years ago. I hated that movie. Every second of it was awful.
I didn't
awful.
Love it either.
Awful.
Well, there you go.
So it's always going to be down to personal taste, but is it fair to say the people who nominate these movies aren't a good representation of the general public?
I think it's fair to say that, yes. They're awash in movies. The members of the Academy are movie people.
Right.
And critics are movie people. So, that's a different kind of animal than a general, going to the movie type person like my father.
Yeah.
So, It's a fine line, and it's a balancing act.
But their voices can certainly be heard. They have the People's Choice Awards, and they have the MTV Movie Awards where people get to vote on those. So if you think your voice isn't being heard through the Hollywood with the Oscars, follow the other award shows more.
And I think the Oscars are a good indication, too, of what people are the experts or whatever you want to call them, are wanting to get out to the people, the type of movies that, hey, maybe you should give this a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe it will change your life, or maybe it will, make you a happier person.
We've talked a little bit about Casey Affleck's side story. Casey Affleck is nominated for Manchester by the Sea. For people who don't know, you can Google his story. He had some ugly episodes a couple of years ago with some women.
Talked about that? Has he fessed up?
Well, actually, they did a little profile of him on the CBS Morning Show on Sunday, and that topic was brought up, but I don't think he said much about it.
These cases were settled out of court.
Exactly.
Yeah. So will this hurt his chances? He does a great job in Manchester by the Sea, but it does kind of temper your opinion of him knowing what's gone on in the past. Does this hurt his chances of winning an award?
Well, this is an interesting question because we can compare it to the film Birth of a Nation this year, where Nate Parker got some backlash and then was overshadowed once the nominations came up at the end of the year. And, a lot of people out of Sundance especially were saying, this is the film of the year. And suddenly the stuff about his past, having been, again, involved in a situation where it was an assault on women, but his was kicked out of court.
Yeah.
But his partner in the film actually did have to have a settlement. Now, I don't know. I don't think that this thing with Affleck is going to affect his chances. I think he is the odds-on favorite to win the Best Actor.
Did you notice, though, that at the Screen Actors Guild Awards over the weekend, he came on to present with the actor who plays his nephew in Manchester by the Sea, and the reception for him was lukewarm. Did you notice that?
Not really.
No.
I didn't take into consideration the reception there. But
I just wonder if there are people that are a little leery of him with the story.
And Denzel is coming on, so it's possible he's an audience favorite, and it's possible that they would give it to him to honor that he both directed
for Fences.
And, right.
Did you like Fences, Bill?
I thought Fences was a very average movie.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Denzel Washington's performance in it is spectacular.
Well, I wouldn't call
it spectacular.
My feeling about that film is somebody else needed to direct it.
Not Denzel Washington.
Not Denzel Washington. Even though he had done the play, I think he was prejudiced by doing the play. You couldn't translate the staginess of it to a cinematic form.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody else who had some expertise in that could possibly have taken that stage play with the same actors and made it more cinematic.
Yeah.
It didn't, even though they set it in Pittsburgh and filmed it in Pittsburgh, it didn't feel like Pittsburgh. It could have been any back lot in Hollywood.
95%, if not more, of the movie takes place on the exact same set, the yard into the front part of the house.
They actually bought a house and completely renovated it to make it look older and into the 50s.
Yeah.
So they did buy a house in Pittsburgh and created that situation.
The writing is sharp. It's a guy, August Wilson, who's done other stage shows in the past, and his writing is great, and the acting is really good, but you feel like you were just watching a play, not so much of a movie, which is fine, but it did, I don't know, it didn't have the wow factor.
You guys are tougher because you're more, but seriously,
yeah,
you're way more into film and know more about it. You just even bringing up the writing and knowing who wrote it, it's like, you know, most people just go watch a movie.
Another example of the audience versus the people who know movies.
Yeah, makes sense.
Good point.
A quick break and then more with Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to be a part of the show. Patrick McDonald is film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com and chief guide for the ChicagoFilmTour.com. Go to the website. Find out what you need to do to get involved in this. You'll love it.
Yep.
It's Groundhog Day.
Yes, it is.
You have
big
some
whip. I am so sick of it.
This is scientific, Wendy.
Vermin,
you can't say no to science.
Don't drive angry.
It's not working.
I agree with you.
It is the dumbest thing, and I think we should stop it.
We should stop paying attention to it.
But I loved the movie.
And, you know, traditionally, we all look forward to those fat men in hats.
At Gobbler's Knob. Please.
I don't know that you can say that on the radio, Wendy. I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to say that. You have some facts about the movie Groundhog
Day. I do. There's a couple of them I wanted to. There is a controversy about exactly how many days he went through. The director.
This is Bill Murray's character.
And I'm talking about Harold Ramis. He thinks it's 10 years, or he has expressed that it's 10 years.
Yeah.
And then there are other websites that have gone and calculated it to be 8 years, 8 months, and 16 days.
So this is how many times the character relived that day.
Right, relives that day. All now, in the film, there's actually only 38 days depicted.
Yeah.
But here it says that it could be up to 12,403 days.
Based on
Or just under 34 years. Because he became a master piano player.
Oh,
and apparently there is a note.
Some people have too much time on their hands,
script.
If I may just add that.
No, you're right. You're right.
So that takes time, more time than.
This is a website called Obsessed with Film who figured out that it was 12,403 days. Can you imagine? And one of the notes in the script, which didn't come out in the movie, was that he read a page a day at the local library and got through the entire collection of books in the library, which was
that's interesting.
Why he was able to come up with those wacky kind of. How about some of the people who are considered? This is interesting. Tom Hanks, Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and John Travolta were considered for the role.
All for the part that Bill Murray
right,
ended
Bill
up playing.
Murray ended
really?
Up playing. But they were all considered too nice by Harold Ramis. I guess that was before Chevy Chase became a little meaner.
Bill Murray's pretty perfect for that role, I
gotta
tell you.
Yeah, you can't imagine anybody else.
I really can't.
Now, this is the movie, if people don't know this, they will in a minute. Bill Murray and Harold Ramis were close for many, many years.
Yes.
And then there was a rift between them, and it was because of Groundhog Day. The perception is this a comedy or a drama? And they differed on that, right?
Yes. And in fact, Bill Murray got so exasperated about the direction that Ramis was giving him, he would just say, is it Mean Phil or Nice Phil?
Yeah.
Whenever they would shoot. And he was also going through a divorce at the time. And
Bill Murray was.
Bill Murray, yes. And he kept bothering Ramis during the filming of this because of this situation in his personal life. And Ramis sort of sloughed him off to the screenwriter.
Yeah.
That's why he shouldn't work with friends. Yep. Sorry, Bill.
No, it's all right.
Yeah.
I get it.
Exactly. And
seems bad that they couldn't.
That caused a rift between them for years.
For many years, huh? Mm-hmm. Did they make up before Harold passed away?
They did, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of, people always wonder, well, what happened to that ghost? But they were going to make another Ghostbusters, but that was one of the things that was getting in their way was this fight that went on for forever. Yeah.
What'd you think of Murray's role in the new Ghostbusters?
Haven't seen the new Ghostbusters.
Okay. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yet.
It's on my list of movies to ignore.
I will see it eventually.
Are you going to see it?
Bill Leff's list of
Dylan
movies to
liked it.
To
Jim
ignore.
Liked it. I mean, didn't love it, but it was
I liked it, didn't love it. You know, again, it was Paul Feig, and
he's funny.
He's funny, but I don't know why he was directing this film.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, because there was a certain aspects of it that was like him, but overall it was just a big special effects extravaganza.
Don't you fear, you know, they're making another Ocean's 11 movie and they're doing it with an all-female cast, much like they just did with the Ghostbusters. So don't you think that if this new Ocean's 11 with an incredible cast.
What would Sinatra say about that?
Well, he would not be happy. But don't you think that if this one doesn't do well, because the Ghostbusters movie with an all-woman cast did not do very well.
No, they canceled all the sequels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is it all riding on what happens with this new Ocean's 11 movie? It is, right?
The Ocean's 11 concept, for one thing, is, why are people really pining for that anymore?
The first one was good.
Didn't see the remake.
And then it watered, like a lot of movies, a little watered down.
I like the first remake. In fact, actually, the original is incomprehensible. I defy anybody to watch
the original
Rat Pack version and understand it, but okay.
It was just friends making a movie. They didn't care.
I think they should remake Summer of 42, and you should star in it, Bill.
I would like to be in a remake of Summer of 42. I would.
Was it Hermie or Oski? That
I would play a dual role. I would be Hermie and Oski.
See,
that digital effects would be.
I like
that.
It.
I'd wear a funny mustache for one of them, and not for the other one. Patrick, we only had a minute or two.
All right.
There are a couple movies coming out, and The Comedian is the Robert De Niro movie that people are saying, "Uh-oh, what happened here?"
Well, yes, what did happen here? There is way too much plot in this thing. I think if they would have just stuck with the fact that he was a down and out stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, stand-ups are interesting people. They are possessed of many kind of personality quirks, and they just kind of got away from that. They had to have a relationship with Leslie Mann, mm-hmm. 25 years his junior. They never developed that, and there's a lot of things that happen where they keep going for scene after scene after scene after scene, and you're just like, stop.
Two out of five.
Yeah.
Even a guy who is Robert De Niro, you can only do so much, right?
I guess, but the stand-up itself is pretty darn good, and he does develop a character with the stand-up. Jeffrey Ross is on the writing team on this, and it was a story that came up, and there's three other writers, so they're just throwing things at it. You know, I don't think there was any rhyme or reason to how they developed the screenplay, unfortunately. So,
and then the other movie, we have so little time, but The Space Between Us.
2.5 out of 5.
What is this?
Literally star-crossed lovers, Asia Butterfield and Britt Robertson, too young. I thought it was like one of those young adult fiction series.
Yeah.
I really did, like, but this is a made-up, completely new movie. And, you know, it even had the sequel, Itis, at the end. But 2.5 out of 5. I was in the audience. I think kids will like it. Or teens will like it if they know nothing about science, medicine, or Law and Order.
Oh. Fair.
Good to know.
I stole that line from last night from a critic.
So. Patrick, thank you for being here. That's Patrick McDonald. He's the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. That's his website. And also chief guide over at ChicagoFilmTour.com. Thank you, Kim, or Kim Gordon, whichever you prefer.
Now, see, in that case, it's just thank you, Kim.
Yeah,
I'm still learning.
I'm still learning. Earlier, I introduced Kim was about to do the news, and I just, you know me, Wendy. It's all off the seat of my pants. I just said, and now with the news, it's Kim, like that. I didn't say Gordon. And Kim waited about 5 minutes before she started in with the news.
All right, that's a slight exaggeration.
Well, you know, we're all creatures of habit. So when you're used to something, you're like, wait, is there something else that's supposed to go on here?
You're right.
Bill's not very formal, though, so no. I understand why you did it. But it sounded like, and now with the news, here's Kim. But it sounded like there was more coming.
I left out an up note, didn't I? I should have just said,
you're talking like the girls today? That always talk like this, and what are you going to do about it?
That's called upspeaking. Did you know that?
Yes.
I just learned that. I didn't know what that word meant, and somebody said, how about all the upspeaking that's going on? And I go, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? All the upspeaking.
I just saw that on a show. I can't remember. It could be Speechless or the Goldbergs or the Real O'Neills.
Is it a new concept? Is it a new word?
No.
Because I'd never heard of upspeaking until the other day, and somebody was talking about how it drives them crazy.
Really? I don't know what you're talking about. I can't even do it.
I don't know if that's the right context.
And that does seem like people are going to say something else, and then they don't. And when they end up high like that, it's kind of strange.
Oh, I guess.
When you finish the sentence, you should say, you know, I'm done.
Yes.
Or you go down. You don't go up.
Right.
Remember the guy, was it Electric Company or was it Sesame Street, where he'd go, the end. That was a period. Exclamation point was...
That was Victor Borga.
You're right. You're right.
It was Victor Borga.
Was it on Electric Company?
Yeah, they used to do that on Electric Company. And yeah.
You remember that?
Punctuation of any kind, he would make a noise.
But each one had a different one.
Yeah, that was fun. That was Victor Borga teaching us how to use punctuation.
Well, so now the upspeakers have to, at the end of a sentence, go, and then you'd know it's a period, even though they're talking up like this.
Here's where I think it comes into play. You know how a couple of years ago people started saying, I know, right? Even though that's ridiculous, because how would the other person know if they're right or not? Right? If I'm expressing some sort of, if you're saying to me anything and I go, I know, right? How do you know if that's right?
Well, just saying like, yes, it is. That's just a hip way of doing it.
Is that what that is? I don't know where that came from.
Gummy bears are great. I know, right?
But would you, like, how did that happen? How did that?
I don't know how a lot of all this happened.
No, I'm not sure how that happened.
So that's the big one that bothers me. There are people you hear, these very intelligent people that you interview.
Yeah.
So how is, or you ask a question, how is it going to affect us? So that one, really,
that's become a major problem, hasn't it?
I know I say like a lot. I say, you know, not as much as Dan Hampton, but I do say, you know, but I...
When Dan Hampton comes to pound on people, by the way, I'm going to run so fast.
You really are good at throwing people under the bus, by the way. There is a security system here in the Tribune Tower, and you have to basically run your security card, which is your ID card, past a little screen, and then the gates open up,
yeah,
like
it's
Get
magic.
Smart, so
right.
You can walk to the elevators. The last four times in between shows, we go upstairs, we record a promo for the next day sometimes, and I flash my badge to the thing, and I walk through, and you go through on my slot opening.
Yes, I do.
Well, you're supposed to show your badge, too, so this alarm goes off.
Yeah, a loud, it sounds dangerous.
It does.
Intruder alert, like that kind of.
Exactly.
Right.
So today, you did that again.
Yes.
And I showed my badge. I walked through as the gates opened, and you went in through
just
my gate.
Through.
And then the alarm went off, and two security guards ran up to see what it was, and Bill just pointed to me. Right. I wasn't even the culprit.
But they didn't know that. The important thing is
I don't need a blemish on my record.
I'm skating
you
on
so many blemishes already.
I'm skating on the thinnest device that there is here at WGN Radio. One more infraction and I could be out in the cold. So I just thought in a case like that, you look a lot more guilty than I do. And they were buying it.
What are you saying?
The security team was buying it. They knew.
They laughed.
Don't you want a security team with a sense of humor?
Yes.
I do. And they proved to have one.
All right. I got to find out about UpTalk.
That's a phrase, I swear to you, I had never heard of until, this is the second time I've heard it within a month, and I didn't know what it was, and I went to the internet to look it up, because I thought, if this is such a problem, I should be aware of it. I don't know what it is. So why all of a sudden are people ending sentences on an upswing instead of a downswing, the way it's gone for centuries? What is this? What has started this trend, do you think?
It's a topsy-turvy world.
Is that what it is? That might be what it is, Steve.
Somebody's blaming it on Jeopardy.
You can't blame this on Jeopardy.
Because you answer in the form of a question.
But that's on Jeopardy. That's where you have to. But I don't think it's because of Jeopardy.
Smithsonian.com. What can Jeopardy tell us about UpTalk? They studied 100 episodes of Jeopardy. And
the people who do it most are not watching Jeopardy. I can guarantee you that.
As the episodes played, he noted when contestants ended their answer with a rising intonation, UpTalk, versus a flat or downward one.
But on Jeopardy, you're required to answer in the form of a question.
Right.
So you have to answer that way. But in real life, you don't. Alex Trebek isn't going to take points away if we don't end our sentences properly in real life.
What happens if you talk to him off the air and you don't ask something in the form of a question? Does
nuts.
He ignore you?
He gets crazy.
While men UpTalk less than women.
I believe that. Do you believe that?
Women's UpTalk indicates to a certain amount uncertainty. So when people, but see, these are just little girls that are talking. I can't even do it correctly, but.
What's an example?
I had pizza for lunch.
So it's said, it's a statement, but it seems like it's a question.
Right. So then I want to go, oh, really? Did you? Well, yeah, I told you I had pizza for lunch.
That's where you throw in an I know, right? Right in there. Just
to, are you just trying to hit me up?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
Debbie.
That's why you're not on the jury.
You are so hurtful. I really wanted to be a juror.
I know you did.
And I was not chosen. Someday I will. And you know what? It's going to be you that's up on trial for something. For being a meanie. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I moved here from Missouri, and my husband has always told me that Canadians do this a lot. When they're speaking, they end everything where it goes up at the end, and it drives you absolutely crazy.
I do
yeah,
have
you're
to
good
say,
at it.
I have spent some time in Canada, and that does seem to happen a lot in Canada. I can't explain why, but there is something to that.
Didn't the McKenzie brothers do that in the 80s? Hey,
a little bit.
They just ended everything with A.
A?
A, yeah. So that's my comment.
Interesting.
Thank you so much, Debbie.
Blame the Canadians. And Alex Trebek, for the record, Canadian.
BBC News did a story on how UpTalk originated. Shall we take a break and come back and figure it out?
The history of UpTalk. I think that's next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're good at it.
Learn how real Chicagoans live, the day-to-day struggles and successes with health, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy Chicago Sundays at 11:30 a.m. on WGN TV.
It's hard to do, isn't it?
The timing has to be just right. We're talking about a new phenomena in the world of speaking, and that's called upspeak. What it is you end your sentences on a high note as opposed to the more traditional low note, and it sounds like you're asking a question when, in fact, you're making a statement. Where did it start? Who started this?
All right, well, I'm at GQ.com.
That's where I usually am. I never see you in there.
I borrowed your GQ magazine. I can tell you're a subscriber.
Yes.
What, this is 2002?
Yeah, I just got the January 2002 issue.
Again, they're citing Jeopardy.
How are people blaming this on Jeopardy? That's not fair.
All right. Several recent studies, this is a couple years old, confirm this. The first study conducted by sociologist Thomas J. Linneman found a startling incidence among male contestants on Jeopardy, especially when ringing in to gently correct an answer by a female contestant.
Yeah.
So what is, I'm not giving an example. The other more disturbing study was done at the University of California, San Diego, where linguists found that even though young women upspeak twice as often as men do, men ages 18 to 22 still upspoke a lot. Men don't think they do it, a co-author of the study told the New York Times, but they do. The roots of the sociolinguistic scourge are murky.
I told you that.
could there be a link to internet snark? That was a question, so that's why I went up.
Oh, all right, well, you're supposed to there. It's okay. A question.
Maybe. It's a new generation of sensitive guys trying to sound like women in order to relate to them. Again, this is from GQ.
I don't believe that. Do you believe that?
I don't believe that.
That's not true.
That's not true?
Right.
See, I can't even do it. All right. Beatrice wants to jump in. Hello there, Beatrice.
Hi, Wendy. Really enjoy both you and Bill. I look forward to listening to your program every day.
Thank you, Beatrice.
I stream it because I'm out in Indianapolis.
Oh, thank
you. But in answer to your up talk, you know who did it from the very beginning when her season started was the actress on Bones.
Oh, Deschanel? Emily Deschanel?
Zoe Deschanel?
No, Emily.
And it irritated the heck out of me. And I refuse to watch it because of that. I didn't know there was a label for it, though.
Yeah, that's what the terminology is. It's called upspeak. I guess it's been around forever, but it finally has a name attached to it. But I know the actress is Emily Deschanel, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, her vocal pattern is exactly that. It's very ambiguous
at the
end.
Irritating.
I guess it can be.
Now, one of the studies said it's if you're unsure of yourself or you're not very assertive, it's like that's why they're claiming women do it more because maybe we're scared to speak.
It's really hard for me to do.
Example, Wendy. Well, thank you very much for taking my call and keep up the good work, both of you.
We'll do our best, Beatrice. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Beatrice. See, Beatrice knows how to stream.
Yeah.
Because we'll be on the stream.
Yeah.
Starting March 13th.
Right.
Don't cross the stream.
Please don't cross the stream.
All right. Who is this? Francie?
Hello?
Hi there. Is your name Francie?
Hi. It is.
That was upspeak, but it was a question.
Right. You had to do it that way.
So I'm a speech therapist.
Yes.
And I just did another thing.
I know. I was just going to say, you just said so, and I didn't want to.
That is my other thing. I'm crazy, and I just said it.
No.
Anyway, it is a new habit that everybody's doing, and it drives me nuts, and I don't know how it got started. But I think it was with younger girls.
So you're trying to do it.
You're good at this, France. You're very good at this. You could teach a class on this.
Yeah, I wanted the class and not how to do it.
Wendy just suggested the possibility that maybe people are doing this because they're a little unsure of themselves. It's an ambiguous way to end a sentence. Is that why it is? Are people just unsure of what they're saying now?
No, I think it's just a habit and a way of speaking that took hold.
Yeah. And there's no reason to blame Canada or Jeopardy, is there?
No.
I don't think so.
Because Jeopardy, they're asking a question. So they should be raising their intonation at that.
Sure, right. on a question, but never on a statement. You want to end a statement on the downswing, not on the upswing.
You just did it. Right. Never on a statement.
You're ending a statement with a period, not a question mark.
Now, somebody is saying that in Great Britain, they speak like that typically because they have relatives there. And when they Skype over there, and I'm paraphrasing because I lost the text.
Yeah.
But that they speak like that frequently. Any thoughts on that, Francie?
They might, but that would be part of their accent. That would be part of the way they speak. Then.
Hello. See, they go up.
Right.
Right, they do.
That's their language, so to speak. That's their accent. That's how they speak.
That's We're not throwing not them under the bus or the carriage, I guess, if it's England.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's not typical for Americans.
No, I don't think it is either. But
talking.
Right, to just go up. But it's not decreasing, it's increasing. Don't you find that more
it
and more
is
people
increasing.
Are... Yeah, that's...
I
that's,
think it's just took hold. And it seems like it's maybe... 30 years old and under, I think, do that.
That's who does it primarily.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. So when did the so start happening, Francie?
I don't know. That's really recent. And I don't, you know, sometimes there is a purpose to say so.
Sure. It's a bridge. You wouldn't want to start out the majority of your sentences with the word so. But in the middle, if you're making a comparison or a this is leading to this, then you want to use so.
And I would say I've noticed that just really within the last year or year or two, I think.
I think I have the derivation of that one, actually.
What is it?
I don't typically say it very often when I'm asked a question. I really try not to say it on the air, and it has not become a habit. But I find when I'm at home, honest to God, when I'm at home and I'm trying to get things organized between the kids and the big kid gym, I will go, so here's what we're going to do. So I find myself saying that a lot at home, and I wonder if that comes into...
That's a little different. I'm sorry I interrupted you. That's a little different because that is a place you could use so. But what's happening now is somebody will go up to say something or somebody will be asked a question and they'll say, so I went to the store or so yes. So here I go. I'm doing this. You know, they'll answer with a yes or a so, and it doesn't really call for it.
No, it's unnecessary. You're just... using an extra word that didn't need to be there.
For a half a second of a stall, because at first I thought it was a stall tactic where you're getting your thoughts together to come out, but it's not because it doesn't save you that much time.
No,
or give you that
like
much time.
It's not like using or where you're stopping to think of it. It's just people are starting their sentences with so, and they're ending it with a question.
And Francie, Wendy and I have discussed this in the past. It almost sounds like when you hear somebody that keeps starting their answers with the word so, it almost makes it sound like, oh, okay, I have a stock answer for this that I use anytime anyone asks me this question, so I'll just pull that out of my hat.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that, where it's just like, well, so here's my answer.
Yeah.
So yes.
All right, Francie, as a speech therapist, how do we stop doing these things? Any recommendations in the next 30 seconds?
You don't really stop it unless they're younger and they're in speech therapy. It's probably not going to be stopped. It's a habit. It's a fad. It's probably going to be a way of speaking. It's sort of like valley speak for a while. People were speaking.
Oh my
like
God!
That.
I know, right?
Why? Why? Yeah. So I think it's one of those kind of things where. Hopefully it'll go away.
I like your answer. Mandatory speech therapy, and then we'll charge Mexico for that. I think that's doable.
I think that's perfect. We'll charge Mexico for that.
It'll work.
Thank you, Francie. Yes.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, we must take a break. Did we solve this? I'm not sure we did. We did our best, but I'm not positive we did, but we tried. We'll take a break. We have news. Steve will give you the news, and then right after the news, a lot more shows. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Steve, thank you so much. Ryan Burrow is in the studio with us, of course, part of the WGN news team and also ABC News correspondent. And some interesting news came out. Drew Peterson, of course, we all remember him. He was sentenced to 38 years in prison for the 2004 slaying of his third wife, Kathleen Savio. And now one of his sons is claiming, I think my dad did... killed two people.
Yeah, it's kind of a twofer. He said it in this Lifetime show that he did, and as well, it's written very well by Kate Thayer. Do we have Kate?
Kate's
Thayer
on the line with us now.
Maybe
hi, Kate.
Talk to her. I mean, she's the one. Yeah.
All right. So, listen, knowing about Drew Peterson, I still want to know where Stacey Peterson is. It's something that really is baffling to many and especially me. So what can you tell us about this story now with his son?
Well, nothing about where Stacey is, but...
No.
So we got word that he had done this Lifetime show and...
Recently?
So I watched it. Yeah, it aired earlier this month on apparently a series that they have on Lifetime Movie Network.
Lifetime
so
for
I
women.
Checked it out. Yeah, exactly. So I checked it out and discovered that he had said some kind of interesting things about his dad related to Kathleen and that case. But not too much about Stacey, so I decided to reach out to him and see if he would tell us a little more.
And
he did.
His words, Kate, were that he being his dad, Drew Peterson, he probably killed Kathleen Savio. What prompted this statement? Was he asked that question directly, or did he just volunteer this on his own? How did this come to be?
Well, the probably statement was from the show.
Yeah.
And the other quote was with me, that basically he didn't want to come out and say that his dad did it, but he's, you know, sure that he did.
That he's saying yes and no at almost the exact same time, isn't he?
Well, I think what that was is, you know, I think it's probably hard for him to think about that. I mean, it is his dad. And obviously he had some tumultuous years with his dad, you know, divorces and infidelity and remarriages and all of that.
Missing loved ones.
Right.
That happened a lot around him.
Yeah, and his stepmother dying tragically, and then, you know, and then, of course, Stacy turns up missing. So I think that even though all of those odd things are going on, it still is his dad. And so him talking about this, maybe he wasn't completely comfortable, and it maybe took him some time to come to terms with it.
I love in this story, and the headline, the big grabber, is obviously Drew Peterson's son, father, probably killed both wives. But really, you unpack what's been going on in Bolingbrook since this all happened. I mean, kind of the emotions that have followed through. He's been watching over the children of these women over this period of time. He's living in the same house. I mean, this is the story that we don't really hear about. You know, once the case is over and the bad guy goes to jail, or who we assume to be the bad guy goes to jail, story kind of ends at that point. But you do a great job here. And if you have a chance to read it in the Chicago Tribune or ChicagoTribune.com, maybe you can kind of develop a little bit, explain to people a little bit about some of the things that he's been through over the last few years.
Sure. So he has not had the best time. He, of course, was fired from his job with the Oak Brook Police Department.
What was that about? Because I remember that being in the news where, unfortunately, the headline, Drew Peterson's son, also a police officer, fired from his job in Oak Brook.
Mm-hmm. So after Stacy went missing the day after, Drew gave his son, Stephen, some guns that had been in his home. And what Stephen told me was that his dad told him, you know, Stacy's gone. She left me for another man. The same stuff he told police and everyone. But hold on to these guns because, you know, they're going to be searching my house and I want them safe. And then he later gave his son some checks, which, you know, same explanation, basically. And so because of all of that, his department fired him, saying that, you know, because he was cooperative with police, but he didn't come out right away and, like, call them, you know, hey, my dad has given me these things. So they thought that that was troublesome to the Stacy Peterson investigation, and he was eventually fired.
So he's lost his job. His dad's behind bars. There are all these family situations that need to get kind of figured out and situated, home situations with any family that has to deal with. And on top of that, I can't imagine that it's easy for him to find a job after all of this goes on.
Yeah, he was telling me that he's really concerned about that. He's started trying to look for a job, and you know, he's having to say that he's been fired from his last one. So,
and there was some money coming in from Drew Peterson, correct? Some pension money that was coming in for a while there.
Yes. So Drew's pension did not stop until this last summer. And he was using that. He is guardian of the children, and the pension was for the kids. So
we all sit here and we say, oh my gosh, how can this guy still be getting money? How can these checks still be flowing? But essentially in your article, you say, well, the money was going to his son, who was using it to pay and help raise these children that were kind of left behind in all of this.
Which, you know, that you think about the kids, how terrible is that? Now, Stephen Peterson, who is his mother? Drew's first wife?
His mom, yes. Drew's first wife.
And she's still alive and around? I don't mean that to be flippant. I really don't.
Though. Yeah.
Yes, she's around.
And she didn't say many bad things, if any bad things, about him, about Drew Peterson, did she? I don't remember that happening, Kate.
No. You know, this part of the family has mostly stayed out of the limelight, except for, obviously, Stephen Peterson's problems with his job, because that was a, you know, hearings that were covered by reporters. But yes, his mom, I don't recall ever making public statements, but I'm not really sure about that. But she is around, and he said that she actually kind of serves as, you know, a grandmother figure to these kids that he's taking care of along with his own daughter. So,
and some credit has to be given to Stephen, because not only did he take care of Drew and Stacy's two children, who are now middle school age, he looked after Drew's two sons with Kathleen Savio, who are now young adults. So, I mean,
how weird of a scenario is
weird,
that,
but
by
it's
the
so
way,
admirable.
Especially knowing what we know now and what people have been thinking, that essentially the brother of potentially the killer, or the son of potentially the killer, is the one who's raising these children. I mean, it's just, it's bizarre. It's weird to think about.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, it is. There's been a lot on his plate since this has all gone down. But yeah, he's basically been the primary parental figure in their lives. I think they were in high school when this all started happening, and Drew eventually was arrested. But yeah, they're older now, but
still, it's admirable.
You know, that's where they go, and they come home for Christmas and all that, you know. So
yeah, in the house too. Now, Kate, did you get any kind of indication? I know we're all, you know, we know about the 38 years behind bars, and then the threats that were made, and then the additional time that was put on top of that. Has the investigation into Stacy just kind of stalled out at this point? Did you get any sense from Stephen whether, you know, there were more court dates in the future, if he was kind of looking at that, or is this thing just kind of settled now that it seems like Drew's going to be locked up for a long time?
Well, the state police still consider it an open investigation, and they have, you know, a number to call and all that. So, but Stephen himself, he's sort of kept himself removed from all the legal stuff beyond his own issues, obviously. He did not attend the trials, is what he told me. So he's just focused on, you know, raising his siblings, getting his life together, not so much on the legal troubles of his dad or any future legal troubles that might come down the line. Drew Peterson has not been charged in the Stacy Peterson disappearance. He is,
which just boggles my mind. But I know, with no evidence, no body,
you just have the feeling that this is kind of, this is how I feel when I read it. The Brown's Chicken and pasta murders in Palatine. You remember that? How all of a sudden it was more than a decade later, and it's like all of a sudden the news headline was, you know, all of a sudden we've got someone, we've got a suspect. It's like,
because,
oh my gosh,
the DNA on a chicken leg.
I forgot about that story, and it's a decade later, and you just have a feeling that years from now, all of a sudden, you know, some breaking news flash is going to happen while you're watching the 5 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news. It's going to be like, oh my gosh, there it is. You know, finally been figured out. So,
Kate, in talking to him, in talking to Stephen Peterson, do you develop some sort of a sympathy for him? I would imagine you would, wouldn't you?
He didn't do anything,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel for the guy, you know, but I mean, it's not really
you can't pick
about
your parents,
think,
don't you?
Yeah.
I feel so sorry for him.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough situation to be in. All those kids, you know, some have lost their mother, and obviously they're not going to see their dad.
Right.
Does Stephen visit his dad? I know. Is Drew Peterson in Menard Correctional Center?
No, he's really far away, and I think I had that in the story. They have not seen him there as of right now. So
that was a prison, by the way, that last spring, I think it was, when the floods happened, they actually had to clear some of the inmates out of there because it was in that floodplain. So we didn't really know what happened if Drew had been moved, but that's a little side story. But yeah, he's downstate right now, locked up.
Well, we're gonna
as far as I know, he's still there. So
Kate there on the line with us from ChicagoTribune.com. Please check out her article. Can you hang on for just a second? We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this.
Sure.
Ryan, you're good on tape, too?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Spill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Spill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Ryan Burrow is in the studio with us, and we have Chicago Tribune reporter Kate Thayer on the line with us. And please check out the article that's called Drew Peterson's Son, Father Probably Killed Both Wives. Kate, you were talking to us about this Lifetime special that Stephen Peterson appeared on, and one would think that he did it because he probably needs some money at this point, correct?
Yes. he said, I mean, that was part of it, yes.
All right, he needs some money. An interesting thing on the show, Steven Peterson didn't really talk about Stacey Peterson's disappearance, but spoke a little bit about his dad's rocky relationship with Kathleen Savio. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. So he can remember, you know, as a teenager hearing fights. That sounded pretty bad. He said there'd be stuff all over the house afterward. And, you know, then all of a sudden there was a new, younger wife in the picture. So, and he talked about that a little bit, you know, she was so young when they met and that was a little odd, but he didn't say much more about Stacey on the show. He told me that, you know, the next day it was, he saw her and she looked scared, those kinds of things. So, and then of course that he didn't really want to admit it, but he was pretty sure that his dad killed Stacey too, although he did not know any details, he said, at all. So
okay, Drew was a guy who loved the media attention. Have you or has anyone in the media gone to him after this new fold and said, what's your take on what your son has said, that you probably killed two of your wives?
No, I called his lawyer before the story ran.
Yeah.
And he said he was aware that, because I think Drew had told him that Steven was going to tape the show, but he had not seen the show, wasn't really concerned. And Steven doesn't know if Drew watched it all.
You know he did.
Well, Lifetime has really grabbed onto this family, though, because they were the ones, am I correct? They were the ones that did the Drew Peterson story featuring Rob Lowe, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
It was Lifetime,
yeah,
wasn't
the
it?
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've really grabbed onto this story. It's a compelling story, not just for Chicagoans, but I think nationwide. I mean, the story is just, you know, the man with multiple wives who have disappeared or
you just
died.
Wonder in prison as he is Lifetime one of the channels that you can watch?
Yeah, trying to easily. Calm people down.
I don't know if Lifetime is the network of choice in most prisons, is it?
Well, they don't want to, they don't let them watch Cops, if
no.
That's what you're saying.
No.
Steven Peterson, and you mentioned this too in your story, Kate Thayer on the line with us. Stacey acted a bit scared after Savio's death. You know, what if she was getting onto something and maybe thought, boy, this is suspect how his wife died. Maybe she was getting closer to the truth and then all of a sudden she disappeared. There are so many theories on this. Has that been brought up?
Well, at trial, I mean, this has been in the stories we've run at trial. They, of course, called to the stand her friend, who we think was like a pastor, and she had said things to him, and also an attorney, a divorce attorney that she had, you know, said that she knew things about, you know, Drew and Kathleen's death and all that. So that's, I mean, who knows? We don't know. She's not here to tell us, but it seems that that was what she was thinking, that she could be next. So. But we don't know.
Joanne is a caller who has a question and a good one. Kate Thayer on the line with us, ChicagoTribune.com. You can find her report, Drew Peterson's son, father probably killed both wives. Did you have a question, Joanne?
Yes. In the article, it stated that Drew Peterson's son, who's watching his siblings, will not allow Stacey Peterson's sister or family to visit the children. I was just wondering what the reason for that, and is Stacey Peterson's family taking legal action for visitation rights?
Yeah. Well, it's her sister that's trying to see them, and she's talked to me about that, and he said that he, you know, doesn't really want them to see her sister.
Do we know the reason?
Well, he said he just didn't trust her, and there's a lot of, you know, bad blood between them. You know, in the years after all of this happened, I think they both were saying things in the press. So,
which you have to understand, you know, Cassandra's sister went missing. It's, you know, I'm sure it's a he said, she said, and everybody's trying to get to the solution.
But now they seem in agreement. Right. If even the kid is saying, I think my dad did this.
Yeah, that's
they've
true.
They've got something in common.
Thanks, Joanne.
Yeah,
that's a
I
good
mean,
question.
I don't know. And they do see... I'm not sure if this made the story or not. They see an aunt of Stacy's who lives in California.
Yeah.
But that's really the only family that they have contact with. But the one member that's really over the years tried to see them is her sister. And that hasn't happened yet. And as far as legal action, what she told me was that there really wasn't a lot she could do. Because she's an aunt, she is not, you know, a grandparent, because there's grandparent rights and obviously parent rights. But as far as, like, aunt visitation, that's not really a thing in the courts. So
on Thanksgiving, when you're sitting with your family around the table going, how do I get along with these people? Think about this family and what they must go through. Oh, it's impossible.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a lot that's gone on and obviously very huge emotional things to deal with. So it's not really surprising that there's some family ties have been cut. But, you know, who knows? He seemed in the show, because part of the show was kind of designed to bring him together with Kathleen Savio's sister.
Interesting.
And they seemed, and again, this is, you know, a Lifetime series show. So
right. It's called Monster in My Family. Can you tell us... in the article, it mentions that Steven Peterson identified with the show's host. We only have about a minute, but this is kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, so the show is hosted by a woman whose dad was a famous serial killer out near the West Coast, like in the 90s. And apparently she has this show where she talks to other people in her situation. I'm not really a regular watcher of the show, but Steven said that he identified with her, that she understood some of the emotions he's gone through in the past several years, thinking about his dad. And
people look at you differently when you're the son of someone who's done this, or daughter.
That's what he said.
On top of already dealing with the emotions you're dealing with from whatever. Yeah.
Right. Anger, sadness. You know, wondering, did my dad do this? Did my dad not do this? That's what he told me. And that she, that he identified with her. And that was one of the reasons why he decided to do that show.
Great article. Kate Thayer, please read it, ChicagoTribune.com, because I know Drew Peterson's case is not in the forefront as it should be. I know those blue barrels came up several years ago where they found them in the CalSAG channel, and we all thought this is it. As Ryan, as you mentioned, I'm sure someday something's going to happen where we're going to go, aha.
Yeah, that and the Lane Bryant is the other one that keeps coming up, too. And it's like, man,
unsolved,
what happened
there?
Yeah, unsolved. And one day we're going to be sitting down watching the news or listening to the news, and it's going to be like, wow, I remember that. So
Kate,
another one of those.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you talking to us.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kate. That's Kate Thayer, the Chicago Tribune columnist. And Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate the story.
Problem.
That's Ryan Burrow. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next, and then there's more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. This is the second half of today's show. 312-981-7200 is our number. You can call in or text in anytime you like. We'd love to hear from you.
We would love it. Great Leonard Skinner, by the way. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. I did it for you.
I have white trash in my blood. Can I just say
that? Do you have some in your blood?
I know it doesn't shock anybody, but...
No, we're shocked. Kevin, are you shocked? I'm shocked. Steve?
Whoa.
We're all a little shocked.
I am shocked.
Skinner.
Yep. I thought you took stuff for that.
Isn't there some sort of a treatment you can take?
I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK to get it out of me.
Is that true?
Yep. I pointed to it, and boom, there it was.
There it was. Oh, you know what's for sale, Wendy? And you should... I'd go in on this with you if you want to buy this. Peanuts are for sale.
You said peanuts?
Peanuts, yeah. Your Charlie Brown and Snoopy and Lucy and Schroeder and Sally and Pigpen and Peppermint Patty and Shermy. They're all for sale.
Have you left anyone out?
Marcy.
Woodstock.
Woodstock, Marcy. Snoopy. Oh, I said Snoopy.
Yeah.
U.S. brand management company, now this is the name of the company, Iconics Brand Group, is exploring a sale of majority stake in Peanuts Worldwide LLC, which owns the rights to the cartoon strip characters Snoopy and Charlie Brown, according to people familiar with the matter. The move comes just 3 months after U.S. insurance company MetLife dropped the Peanuts characters. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
They did that just before Christmas, I think.
Dumb move.
They've been using the mascots. You know, I was thinking about it at the time. I don't know. I love the Peanuts characters. I love them. But I don't know if I would make my decision about insurance based on them.
I would.
Would you?
Not really, but they were cute. And it was memorable.
It was memorable. It was. They've been using the mascots MetLife had for more than 30 years.
God,
and
it's
this,
been that long.
Oh, yeah. A long, long time.
Aren't you surprised that they were given permission to use that?
Well, it wasn't a matter of permission. You license characters out. You know, remember when we were kids, Sears did this with Winnie the Pooh. Like, if
yes.
you went to Sears, there was Winnie the Pooh stuff everywhere.
And in the catalogs.
Yeah.
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 That doesn't seem right to me.
And here's another example. Dairy Queen does it with, I don't think they still do, but they did for years
Bullwinkle?
And years. Not Bullwinkle. Think about when you were a kid.
There were no Dairy Queens
Queen.
Near us.
Oh, you didn't have Dairy Queen by you?
No. There was no. We had to travel very far to get a Nut Buster Parfait.
Nut Buster Parfait. It was Dennis the Menace and
oh,
his friends.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
were,
you're right. Mr.
Queen.
Wilson, the dog.
Yeah, Ruff, the dog. So,
I cannot throw down with you.
In the cartoon world? So it's a major licensing thing. I don't think it says exactly how much money changed hands for the Peanuts characters to be with MetLife for 30 years. But, you know, you're licensing those characters. It's going to cost you money. The characters, which include Lucy, Peppermint Patty, and Pigpen, have attracted the interest of Chinese companies as well as other investors keen to snap up U.S. media and licensing assets, the people said this week.
It doesn't seem fair that after, I know copyrights or whatever
yeah.
sometimes lapse, but can't you update that? Because it just seems
oh, sure.
weird to me.
You can re-up on that,
that
stuff.
Like if you had any money,
yeah.
you could totally buy the rights to this.
All right, listen to this.
You don't
story.
Have enough money, and I'm not going to have
I don't have anywhere near enough
you.
Money. Years ago, I'm trying to remember who I was with, but we saw a little story in a paper that the name and the logo and everything for the Brooklyn Dodgers was up for sale. And when you hear that, you say, because the Brooklyn Dodgers haven't been a baseball team for years and years and years, but somebody had the rights to the logo and the name and everything like that. So it wasn't like an incredible amount of money. It wasn't even $100,000 at the time. It was like $40,000 or $50,000, which I didn't have then and I don't have now.
You're very cute, though, when you go, hey, guys, gather around. You
well,
think we should pitch in?
I
sure, what do you got? And you pull out like $1.37.
Yeah, we couldn't even come close to I couldn't even buy the B in Brooklyn Dodgers, much less the whole logo. So we were like thinking, boy, do we know anybody? And then after a while, we're like, that's ridiculous. It's not even a team anymore. What are we going to do? And then somebody bought it and turned it into a major marketing franchise where you saw it was on T-shirts and sweatshirts and they started making hats again and the
yeah.
logo was all over the place.
Because it's a memorabilia kind of
that's
thing,
what it
you
is.
Know?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Wow.
It's a good thing I don't have money. For my $20 a day, I can't buy any logos. I can't buy the licensing to anything.
Does it say how much this Peanuts is going for?
It says the characters. It doesn't say what it's going for. Oh, it does. It's a lot of money.
It says, does that shock you?
I didn't think it would be this high. I knew it would be high. I didn't think it would be this high. It says that the characters generate, the whole Peanuts gang, generate about $30 million in any 12-month earning period.
So $30 million a year?
That's what they're making in licensing out the characters. It's $30 million
Lord.
A year. But it says Iconics, that's the company that owes them, has a market capitalization of $553 million.
I don't know what any of that means. I'm sorry.
Well, that means if they're worth that and you bought them, it would take you about 16 or 17 years to break even at the rate by which they're selling the name.
You've got time.
I don't have that kind of time. Or I would do it. Maybe I'll just buy Peppermint Patty.
Buy Schroeder, at least.
Schroeder, because I
That's
dress
you.
Like Schroeder. That'd be the one if
you got to start taking piano lessons, by the way.
And not have a bench, just sit on the floor and
yes.
play. I have a Beethoven bust. While MetLife will stop...
what size is it?
Double D. While MetLife will stop flying blimps featuring Snoopy this year. Now, what happens, you know, whenever they do the parades, they always have a giant inflatable Snoopy, don't they? Or
they're not going to anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
But does Charles Schultz still get some kind of...
Well, he's no longer with us.
Well, I don't mean him. I mean his estate.
Corporatious family.
Does he get something or did they
yeah.
sell it to...
No, he still get... Oh, well, they... Who had it for a while? It wasn't Disney.
Michael Jackson?
No, it's not Michael Jackson.
He has the Beatles catalog. How did that happen?
I still can't figure that out.
How did Paul let that happen?
He was friends with Paul McCartney when he bought it out from under him. The story is that he convinced Paul McCartney to stop wasting his time and money with that, and Paul McCartney listened to him, and then he bought it out from under him.
See, I still don't get that.
You got swindled by Michael Jackson. I know. He moonwalked right past him, right to the bank. Sorry, Sir Paul. So if I had the money, I'd buy this in a minute, but I don't even have close to the money. I'd love to have the rights to the Peanuts characters. Well, that'd be great.
Who's going to buy it, do you think?
Somebody will buy it. They said that they expect Chinese companies to buy it up.
Samsung will buy it.
Samsung might buy it. Panda Express. Are they involved? I bet Panda Express buys them up.
That would be so cute.
Right.
Orange chicken with a little side of Woodstock.
Yeah. Oh, that's now we're talking.
That's so funny.
I want my good grief sauce on the side if you could. You could? Okay, excellent. We'll take a quick break and then there's more show. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. The peanuts are for sale, everybody. And I think
peanuts.
If everybody... Yeah, the peanuts.
You're saying it too quickly and
the
it's
peanuts
sounding
are for sale.
Dirty.
I guess so. It's not intentional.
I know.
The peanuts are for sale. Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Lucy, Linus, Schroeder, Peppermint Patty, Marcy, Sherman.
The doghouse?
Miss Othmar.
Who is that?
That's her. That's Miss Othmar.
I had her for third grade.
She's a good teacher.
Yeah, she got married in the middle of the year.
Yeah. She's a very solid teacher, Wendy. They're all for sale. You can buy them all, but be prepared because Chinese companies are planning on outbidding you.
God, that would be so funny to see the Panda Express thing. I don't know why that made me laugh.
With Woodstock in there instead of a panda?
I kind of diluted it, and I'm sorry, when I mentioned the Michael Jackson owning the Beatles rights. And, Michael, you know a little bit more about this?
Well, by the way, real quick, I've called before, but love you guys' show so much.
Oh,
anyway,
thank you.
So,
thanks, Michael.
So basically what it was, you know, back when Paul McCartney was real close with Michael and they were writing music and recording and whatnot, it was Paul McCartney that was advising Michael to buy the rights to things like music, you know, the publishing rights to different things. And he said that, you know, he was telling Michael, that's where the money is. That's pretty much how Paul McCartney became a billionaire.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what happened was, at one point, the Beatles catalog, not the entire catalog, but a large portion of it came up for sale. So Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson both showed up to the auction of the sale, and they were bidding against each other. And what happened was, at one point, Michael Jackson just kept, you know, outbidding Paul McCartney, and eventually Paul said, you know, listen, if it's that important to you, then go ahead and buy it. I don't need to spend the money for it. And he allowed Michael Jackson, he just gave up bidding, and Michael Jackson won the bid for the songs that were available at that time. And that's how he ended up with them. But since then, I'm pretty sure the Michael Jackson estate has gotten rid of a large portion of it as well. But
they sold them back to Paul, maybe.
I think they did.
I'm not even being funny.
Yeah, I think they did.
It's possible he got his hands on some of it, but I know somebody else bought some of that as well. He doesn't own all of it again. But, you know, at this point, does Paul really need the rights to it? I mean, he's worth like $1.5 billion. You know, he's a pretty, pretty.
Yeah, but he wrote it. Wouldn't that bother you?
Yeah, it would bother me.
It would drive me absolutely insane to think somebody else had the rights to it. That's what Prince was all about. He was all about, you know, he battled his record labels for years. From his first three or four albums, because he wrote all the music and he played all the instruments, and he was obsessed with the idea that the record labels owned the majority of the rights to it. So he battled them for years and spent millions till he got the rights to his material back. And from that point forward, anybody who knows anything about the music industry knows that he championed the idea that artists deserve to have the rights to their material. And he was behind that all the time with anybody that he, you know, helped support as far as getting their careers going.
It's really having a son who wants to get into the songwriting and music career. he says, you know, it's one thing if you sell your song to somebody, you know, if like Big and Toasty or who are those country western guys? Big and Rich.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if Michael writes a song and they buy it, then he has sold that. But, you know, it's something to be said that you should be able to, unless you sell it yourself, it just seems weird. You wouldn't have rights to it.
Do you remember? Well, go on, Michael. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the most important part about all of that is, you know, if you do write a song and you sell it off and for some reason it becomes somewhat of a hit, well, whoever owns it, whatever airplay it gets, anybody else who covers it and makes money on it, you get that money. So, you know, the most important part is if you write something, keep the rights to it because you never know if that song is going to be able to make you money for the rest of your life.
Bill, your Jake Arrieta song could make
it's
you
making
money.
A lot of money right
it's
now.
It's making nothing.
Hey, well, Bill, real quick.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying peanuts, you may want to just say peanuts gang.
Peanuts everybody gang. Peanuts gang.
You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Do you remember for a long time you would never hear a Beatles song as a commercial? That just didn't happen. It was very rare that Beatles songs were in soundtracks of movies or television shows. And then when Michael Jackson got part of the catalog, all of a sudden it was commonplace for a Beatles song to be in a commercial or in a movie or a TV show. He was just selling it left and right because the money was flowing in.
I didn't make that connection at all. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that's about the time he owned it.
He didn't care as much about the integrity of the music. Like when it was Paul McCartney and Lennon owning those songs, they didn't want it just showing up in a ketchup commercial. But all of a sudden, when Michael Jackson had it, he's like, yeah, whatever. Just use it.
Although, you know, again, John Lennon passed away and he was killed, I will say. And Yoko Ono had a lot of his doodles and drawings that she, I bought every baby item with that John Lennon drawing on it. Yeah, I mean, I had crib bumpers and comforters and things hanging in the kids' room. I mean, in a weird way, I shouldn't have bought it, but I liked what it looked like. But it's like she just took these little doodles big time.
She did, but, you know, I don't think you were selling out John Lennon. She was, to some extent.
Well, she was,
you were, because you liked the design and you were a fan of John Lennon. So that was your chance. That's not terrible.
I don't understand the world anymore.
Starting
I really
now?
Don't. Yeah, well,
just, that just happened
yes,
now?
Starting now.
All right. Peanuts gang.
All right, that's better. Dustin wanted to jump in real quick, too, and then we got to take a break. Hey, Dustin.
Hi, how you doing? Love the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. I used to live in California in the 90s, and I did work in the music industry, and there was a widespread rumor about Michael Jackson owning the majority stake in Sony Music Publishing, and Tommy Mottola, the head of Sony at the time, he didn't take interest in that. Not only that, he had a team of lawyers that went out and bought not only music publishing rights, they bought jingles. So when you see like the thing like the smiley face,
yeah,
he owned that. He owned what was that? Not Silent Night, but it was a Rockabye Baby.
Really?
He actually owned all these things. So when they said Michael Jackson was broke, yeah, he was cash strapped, but liquid wise, he was worth billions.
How about that?
That's a good business move, but I mean, it's so eclectic. It's so perfect for what he did. He has an amusement park where he lives, and then he just buys the rights to every popular thing.
Yeah.
Boy.
Thank you, Dustin.
Appreciate it, Dustin. We need to take a break. Roe and Ann will be in just a little bit, and we'll find out what they have coming up on their show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's finger looking gold, Wendy.
I liked that.
I like that, too. That was fun.
Can I thank a sponsor of ours?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. When you have stuff that you need done and you don't know who to call or what to do, the first thing I like to do is go to people who sponsor this very radio station.
Why wouldn't you?
And I had a bunch of junk in our basement, and I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and honest to God, you point to it, they carry it out
they
of your house.
They say that in the ads. They really do that?
I know. I didn't really believe it because I told my husband, you're going to have to carry out the old rear projection big screen TV.
Yeah.
You don't. You point to it, boom, it's gone.
It's the way it should be.
I don't hear the magic. You know
no,
how
that's
that,
just sound effects for the commercial.
I was expecting that when that happened.
That doesn't really happen.
Thanks to a fine sponsor of this show and everyone's show and WGN Radio. If you have stuff, it doesn't count for people. If you have someone you don't like in your house, you can't just point to them and 1-800-GOT-JUNK takes it away.
Can you put them in like a chest of drawers first? And
I
then
tried that.
Did you? Yeah.
That could be a nice little side. I mean, I know, I get it would cost extra, but they should look into that.
Got junky people.
That might be a side project.
What about their spinoff business, Got Junk in the Trunk? Is that still up and running? Because they tried that a few years ago. Is that still going?
But I didn't know what to do. And I know you can call your garbage pickup people, your refuse people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we put stickers on our garbage in our suburb. Or you can get the bin, which we had to upgrade because we have a lot of garbage in our house. But you didn't know how to get rid of stuff. You don't want to leave it on your curb, and then you can call your refuse company, and they can kind of figure out, well, it's going to be this much money. And
they figure it out based on the volume or by the weight of it? How do they determine that?
I don't know how the refuse people do it. I know 1-800-GOT-JUNK is how much room it takes up on the truck.
Oh.
So we had a lot of little crappy things.
Like what? What were you tossing?
The big screen rear projection TV, which I moved down into the basement when we got, that's our no def TV.
Yeah.
I thought it'll be cute for the kids to play their video games. You can't see the picture on it. And I helped a guy move it down the stairs. Wow. Jim wasn't home. And I don't know why I did it. And it was just taking up space.
Yeah.
So that's gone.
It's really funny how anybody who's gone through this where you get rid of an old TV and you get a new one, you feel weird throwing it away. You go,
I shouldn't just
throw this away. But you never use that old TV once it stops working.
No. And it was just sitting. It's big. It's those rear projections. Yeah. It was heavy, big, and didn't work.
Right.
What was I going to do? Puppet shows on it?
Boy, we thought those were nice at one time.
I know. And then we had an old cocktail table, like a cocktail table, a square one you'd put in front of the couch.
Uh-huh.
We had an old
door. When's the last time you used that?
I don't know. It's been buried in the basement for a while.
Just keep it in the basement.
I have a problem with purging. This is a problem. I really do have a problem. There is a kitchen table. It's very old, very rickety. It's made of wood. It's a table and four chairs, and it was my mom and dad's very first kitchen table.
You don't want to throw that away, do you?
No, and I didn't this trip.
Too much sentimental value.
But really, what's it doing? It's holding big, long, white cardboard boxes of comic books.
Yeah.
Well, they'd have to be put somewhere.
I know, but that's what the crawl space is for. I have a really...
It's hard to part with those things.
Those are memories there.
I know, but I'm not using it. And it's rickety.
Right.
I shouldn't make fun of my oldest son, Michael, but we had, I think, one garage sale. And this was when he was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And we put everything out. And he kept walking outside and collecting all the stuff that was his and bringing it back
in
the house because he couldn't get rid of it. And I'm like, Michael, you've got to get rid of this. This little bouncy thing, you can't fit your ass into it anymore. We got to get rid of it. But it was mine.
Yeah.
I said, I know. So that's up in the attic. So if you need a bouncy thing.
I do need a bouncy thing. What size bouncy thing is it?
It's
a medium?
No, it's small. It's for a baby that you put them in it and their little legs go through the holes and they bounce up and down.
Why isn't there an adult version of that? If you had an adult version of that, wouldn't you use it every day?
I think it's called the gin and tonic.
Oh, yeah. But it's really hard getting rid of these sentimental things. And then I hope my sister's not listening because there's a love seat that my cousin gave me that I just, it was.
You don't want it anymore.
It didn't serve a purpose.
Now, does your town do this? Because where I live, they do this twice a year. You can throw out anything, and they'll come by and get it.
We're never ready when the village does that.
No?
No, because we don't find out. It's like sometimes a month in advance, and if you're not ready to go through your stuff,
then it's
hard. Have a lot of problem letting go of things.
I guess so. I guess you do.
There's a love seat that is in our dining room right now that I got from my cousin Melanie, who her grandmother and my grandmother were sisters. They came from Italy, six sisters. I was told that they all made out on that love seat.
At the same time?
No, but they all had boyfriends and it had shared houses, so I can't get rid of that. My grandma kissed Nino on that.
Just the knowledge that all those nefarious activities took place on
that
love seat.
It's not the nefarious activities, it's just, you know, they had a moment on there and it's hard.
So in tribute to that history, you can't part with it. You need... That's part of the family lineage.
So do you ever make out with Jim on it?
You should.
You should keep the line
going. Keep that tradition going.
I'm going to have to now because I didn't tell him the story until now.
That'll keep your sons from ever giving it away.
No, they'd be grossed out. They're at that age. Ew, you and Dad kiss? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so hard.
Who told you that part of it? How did you become aware that everyone in your mom's family had at some point made out on this couch?
My cousin Shara. She's probably lying. But I believed
it. Sounds legit.
I mean, I don't know if they, but they all, like, it was a love seat. It's not very big.
Well, it's living up to its title.
But that one, there was a smaller, that's true. There's a smaller one I got rid of because I didn't hear any makeout stories for that one. So that one I could get rid of. It's hard. We had an old door we gave away to 1-800 Got Junk.
Oh, I hate to give away the doors.
I think a couple storm windows that I don't even think were the... I mean, you acquire all these things in your basement.
What was wrong with the door that made you decide we can't use the store anymore?
I don't know what that door was from. It was really...
Just an extra door.
Yeah, it was in the basement.
But it was solid wood, I bet.
Yeah.
Was, right. Yeah.
What else did we give away?
Was it the door that your mom and all of her sisters had made out on at some point?
Where they marked their height.
Right.
Oh, I was this tall when I made out on the other side of it.
When I made out with Nino, I was this tall on the door.
That was my grandfather. My mom wouldn't make out with her father.
No.
You're sick.
I'd get rid of that couch.
Some of this stuff, we've been in the house 20 years, you find stuff in the basement. Mm. This door, I don't know where it fit because it was taller than the ceiling. So I don't.
What?
I know.
How did that happen?
I don't know. A bar stool that my son garbage picked. No, I'm not selling that. There's love in that love seat.
1-800 got funk. Give it to those guys.
Gross. This was a time when they just held hands.
It was
and they wore gloves.
Time, right?
They did more than that, baby, because you're here.
It wasn't. Oh, God.
If that love seat could talk.
Just saying.
I wish it could.
It would
I would love to hear the stories.
Yeah. It would just scream.
It's very hard for me to get rid of stuff, and I'm sorry I made fun of my son Michael who couldn't get rid of his stuff.
No, please.
He was just a baby.
I think he gets it from you, doesn't
don't
he?
Don't you find it hard to get rid of sentimental
I'm
things?
I'm not good with that at all.
So you keep things too?
You know, we have, there's an attic that I have all this stuff from when I went to school. And I always said in my head, I'm going to save this, and one day I'll show it to my own kids and go, when I was in sixth grade, I made this. When I was in seventh grade, I had this, you know. And I've tried that a couple times, and this is what my kids say. Who cares?
Yeah, I've got my college blue books.
Did you ever show them to the kids?
No.
They don't care.
Jim found a detention letter. Oh, God, what was it called? Jim, if you're listening, text me and let me know. He went to a Catholic school, and he called some kid a bad name.
Yeah.
And so he got...
Jug?
Yes!
He got what?
It's called Jug, I think.
What is
he got
jug?
A jug.
Justice Under God?
Yes!
I never heard of the jug.
You went to a Catholic school?
We didn't have jug.
Well, you were a good boy.
My friends were all bad kids.
They never had a jug?
I never heard of the jug, no.
He hung it on the refrigerator, and so he was kind of proud that he found it. He called some kid a bad name.
Yeah.
And he got a jug. And then he read the whole thing. If you are late for this jug, you will get subsequent jugs. And he kept reading jugs. And I'm like, do you really want your kids to see that you did this?
No.
He called the kid a bad name. But he served his time. And you were supposed to have your parents sign the jug and return it. And I said, obviously you didn't because it's on our refrigerator,
yeah.
You know, 30-some years
so
later.
I never knew
Mm-mm.
the trouble he got into.
I'm going to call them. I'm going to call
him. Hold it over his head.
Hey, did you know Jimmy had a jug? I'm surprised you knew that, Bertrand. Thank you
they
for
had
that.
Yeah,
I went to
too,
college
Steve.
With, not of mine, but I went to, a lot of Loyola boys had that.
Former Jugheads?
They were Jugs.
Is that how Jughead got his name? Is that why Jughead is Jughead?
He got in trouble a lot, didn't he?
Not a lot.
He skipped school a lot.
Yeah, maybe.
He was a repeat offender.
Maybe, could be. All right, let's take a break. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, Phil and Wendy WGN.
All right, Jimmy Mack was telling me, well, actually, when we were cleaning out the basement, he found a jug, and I don't mean like from a jug band. It was... a detention, I guess, and I forgot what it was called. Steve Bertrand had helped me out, and did it stand for Justice Under God? Is that what it was?
I think Steve said Justice Under God.
Somebody said, hey, Wendy and Bill went to Our Lady of Perpetual Help, grade school in Glenview, and we had Jug. I'm 46 years old, and until today, I did not know what it meant. Thanks for the info.
I would have, if I was in a school that used that term, I would certainly ask why it was called that. But until today, I didn't even know such a thing. I knew that there were detentions, but I never heard the phrase jug as part of this.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
How about a detention?
Yeah, we would just get detention.
Or demerits did you get? Because some Catholic school, St. Luke's on the north side, we used to get demerits.
We had in first through fourth grade, we had a thing called a star card. So when you would do or say something good, the nun or the teacher, depending on who you had a red stamper, and she would stamp a red star on your star card. And that was like it was like having a gold card. If you have a Visa or MasterCard, the more red stars you had. But if you did something that was bad, they would take a black marker or crayon and you would get a black star. And that was like there was nothing worse in the world than having black stars on your star card. Every once in a while, the principal would say, let me see your star card. And then you'd show. And even if you had like 1,000 red stars, one black star canceled them out.
Well, that stinks.
Yeah.
Bill, you know about jugs? That sounds
dirty. Oh, boy, do I, Wendy.
All right. Well, what about the justice under God, okay?
I went to Catholic schools, grammar school, high school, and college. And I got put in the jug in high school. And
well, it's not like the pokey or something.
It sounds
like
it is.
Well, it is for 4 hours on a Saturday morning.
Oh,
you
no.
You had to go in. Cross my heart up the spit.
What would they have you do when you're in there? What kind of, you just sit there?
We, believe it or not, we had to, the proctor came in, the priest came in and said, okay, I'm going to be checking on you guys. And what we want you to do, and he handed each one of us a copy of the Constitution. He said, I want you to write it backwards.
Oh, no.
Word for word.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my jug.
And then after 4 hours, we were let loose, and I never got put in a jug again.
Jim has texted me his picture of it. Here's what it says. I can't tell you his offense because I'm embarrassed. He did it in Spanish.
He called somebody a bad name.
Starts with an A.
In Spanish or in English?
English.
He called him it in English?
It's funny that the nun wrote it like that, too. Called other students, and it's written out.
Wow.
Here's what it says. Read the following carefully if assigned to jug. One, you are to report to the dean's office after your last class until you have completed your jug hours.
Seems fair.
You must see the dean before your assigned date if you wish to be excused from jug.
Strange wording, right?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Failure to attend jug will result in 2 additional jug hours.
That doesn't sound terrible.
Repeat failure to attend jug subjects students to possible suspension. If student wishes to appeal jug, submit appeal on reverse side of this referral and return to dean. White copy to student, canary and pink copies to dean. This was the white copy
That's
we have on
it.
Our refrigerator.
Bill, you know, you've lived the life. You've lived the jug thug life.
Yes, sir. I have, Bill. And like I said, I'm 70 years old now, and I have not been put into jug since high school.
You're a success story.
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you so much.
Keep
living
the clean life.
I don't want to embarrass Jim. But yeah, called other student, quote, you,
and then a bad word.
Yeah. It's what in quotes,
had,
too.
But it was in Spanish class. If he had said it in Spanish, I wonder if he would have had such a bad penalty. You could have just said, I'm exercising my language. I'm trying a new language out.
I don't think he thought
of that.
And
that kid is being bad.
11/28/1987.
Oh.
That's what this is from. And it's not yellowed at all.
No. You married a rebel.
I know.
You really did.
We called them detention, not jugs. That was something else.
Yeah, so is it Jesuit only? Is that how they determine who does and doesn't use this phrase?
I don't know, Kate. Where does a jug come from?
Well, I know my husband went to a Jesuit high school, and so they had jug, and he said by the time his senior year came around, unlike Bill, who only went to jug once.
Yep.
He was in permanent jug.
Permanent jug.
So he pretty much every Saturday had to figure out, you know, to go to school and work, whatever those prefix
decided to torture those kids. That's what they did. This is back when Loyola was all men, so it was, you know, a little scary.
But that phrase alone, permanent jug, sounds like you're marked for life. There's nothing you could ever do to get back on the track.
I think he thought it as a badge of honor that he was standing up to authority, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, thank you for the jug info, Kate. Have a good one.
Even Charles Manson would go, jug for life. What's wrong with you?
Did I hear he died?
No, he didn't. Charles Manson? No, he's not dead.
Are you sure? He had taken a turn for the worse.
Unless it happened during the show today, but no, as of yesterday, he was just mentioned there was a guy, one of the Manson family members is up for parole, and they just did an update on Charles Manson either yesterday or the day before.
Okay, because I thought he passed away.
No, I think he's all right. He would not get a mention in the In Memoriam segment at the Oscars. His film work is awful at best.
No, Steve Railsback would get the
right,
credit.
He would. For playing him in Helter Skelter?
All right, well, I just wish there was a show called Jug, like Justice Under God, instead of Dragnet.
I know there's a magazine, Wendy, but there's not a TV show. A quick break. Ro and Ann are here for real this time. I announced their arrival about a half
Bill
an hour ago.
Bill thought we were finished a half an hour ago. The new hours don't start till March 13th.
The new schedule is very confusing to me. We'll take a quick break and find out what's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.